From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Wise Dan, 8-length advantage back to Big Blue Kitten. He is back, and he is back in style. Wise Dan and John Velasquez to crush the field in the Ben Ally.
They come down toward the wire. Super Watson and Miguel Vasquez to deliver a huge milestone for trainer Mark Cassie. Super Watson has done it. 3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
And now they're at the eighth pole, and it is microsecond, battling it out here with Maddie's Express. Sanctuary City is third. This is going to be the milestone moment for trainer Todd Pletcher. Has reached the stratosphere. Career victory number 5,000.
It's Troy Ounce right now, a 16th left to history. Troy Ounce is up by 4, and Troy Ounce will give trainer Steve Asfusen his 9,000th career win, only the second trainer to reach that mark.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Is it safe to say that the racing world is on Steve Asmussen watch today? Yeah, I think so. In true Steve Asmussen fashion, the Hall of Famer went 2-for-2 yesterday to equal the record 9,445 career wins of the late Dale Baird. He has 14 horses entered across 4 tracks today, and you have to think that he will stand alone at the end of today's racing as the all-time winningest trainer in the history of thoroughbred racing. And would you believe me if I told you Dale Baird is not in the Horse Racing Hall of Fame? Well, you should, because the sport's now co-all-time wins leader is not a member of its most prestigious club. And I'm going to talk more about that here in a minute, but want to start by saying good morning, HRN Nation, and welcome to another loaded edition of the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, getting you set for another stellar weekend of thoroughbred racing right up until 11 a.m. Eastern this morning. And speaking of the Hall of Fame, yesterday, the long wait for the 7 members of the 2020 Hall of Fame class came to an end when those individuals joined the class of 2021 at the induction ceremony in Saratoga Springs, New York. And if you were unable to catch the speeches live during the ceremony yesterday morning or during our special replay that we had for you here on the network yesterday afternoon, I've got you covered this morning, at least on a smaller scale. Coming up at 8:35 Eastern, you will hear Todd Pletcher's induction speech complete with his good friend Mike Rapoli's fantastic introduction. Couldn't bring you the whole thing. In the interest of time, Mike Rapoli spent 17 minutes introducing his longtime friend Todd Pletcher. And it's a 15-minute talk segment this morning, so I had to cut it down a little bit, but we're going to get you most of Mike Rapoli's introduction, and you will hear Todd Pletcher's entire induction speech at 8:35. And I will be joined live on today's show by dual Hall of Fame member Mark Cassie in my final segment at 10:40 Eastern to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. Mark had a very difficult time getting through his speech. He's an emotional guy. And there were several breakdowns yesterday. Even had to call his wife Tina up to the stage at one point to read part of the speech when he started talking about his mother and the sacrifices that she made that were so critical to him being where he is today. I'll get a chance to visit with Mark in the final segment going down the road to the Breeders' Cup. It is always emotional. It is always humbling. And it is always an extremely special moment when the inductees are called to the podium to officially accept that Hall of Fame nomination. And I'm really excited to share a little piece of that with you here this morning. Not only is Mark going to talk about his Hall of Fame experience, but he will discuss his horses in today's graded stakes at both Del Mar and Saratoga. He has several. We'll talk about those as we go down to the road to the Breeders' Cup as well. Now, I sat in for the Big A, Anthony Stabile, on our Brisnet.com call-in show this past Thursday afternoon. And one caller asked about jockey David Gall, who passed away this week at the age of 79. If you don't know the name, David is currently the fifth all-time leading rider in North American racing history by number of wins. He rode 7,396 winners, but he is not a member of the Racing Hall of Fame. Now, that's more wins, by the way, than Chris McCarron, Edgar Prado, Angel Cordero Jr., Sandy Hawley, Eddie Delahousse, and John Velasquez. All Hall of Famers. But David Gall didn't win Kentucky Derbies or Breeders' Cup races. He made his mark winning lower-level races at lower-level tracks. But the man who won 7,396 races is not a member of the Hall of Fame. Should David Gall be in the Hall of Fame? That was the question that was posed on the call-in show, and I thought it was a fantastic question. The Hall of Fame is supposed to be an elitist group, if you will. Its members are supposed to represent the greatest of the great. We're not supposed to just vote anybody into the Hall of Fame. So does a guy who rode nearly 7,400 winners but never won the big races deserve a place among those greats? I'm sure he didn't have many opportunities. I didn't go back and look and see how many greatest stakes races David Gall competed in, but being a big fish in a small pond, that's why critics will say no. They're going to say, well, he was a big fish in a small pond. He did great with claiming races and lower level races. But, and I pose this question to you. Would his win totals have been the same had he ridden on the New York or California circuits, for example? Well, okay, let's do this. Let's just say that he would have won 2,000 fewer races, but better quality races if he was competing on those bigger circuits. And presumably, he would have won some greatest stakes races competing on the bigger circuit, too. That would mean, if you deduct 2,000 wins from his total, he still would have ended up with 5,396 wins, which would currently rank 25th on the all-time list. Exactly, by the way, where Hall of Famer Javier Castellano sits today, 25th. Well, the same question can be debated and should be debated about trainer Dale Baird and his 9,445 career wins, which up until yesterday was the most by any trainer in the history of the sport. And that's going to be my poll question this morning. You can go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to cast your vote. If you don't do social media, email me, mike@horseracingradio.net. Should trainer Dale Baird be in the Hall of Fame? Yes or no? I'm sure there will be people on both sides of this. People will say, well, he never, his wins came in claiming races. He never competed on the big stage, or he never won the big races. But the man was the all-time wins leader in the history. He's doing something right. Is that good enough to be in the Hall of Fame? So far, the answer has been no. He is not a member. So should trainer Dale Baird be in the Hall of Fame? Yes or no? @HRN on Twitter. Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know your thoughts. And again, you can email me the answer to the question, mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, trainer Brendan Walsh is also going to be a very busy man this weekend. He has several horses coming up, including Maxfield in today's Grade 1 Whitney at Saratoga. He has horses at Ellis Park. I'll talk to him about those. He's going to join me at 9:35 Eastern. I will also get an update from Brendan on his Dubai World Cup winner, Mystic Guide. We'll see what's next for him. Brad Free does a fantastic job covering Del Mar for the Daily Racing Form, and he's going to be here at 9 o'clock Eastern to talk about today's Best Pal and Yellow Ribbon, which are the feature races of the day where the surf meets the turf. And one of the popular new segments that we added when I decided to expand the show to 3 hours earlier this year is In the Room with retired jockey Sean Clancy. And this week, Sean visits with Hall of Fame jockey Jose Santos, and that's going to kick off hour three at 10 o'clock Eastern. Plus, today's first bet, Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. All of that is coming up on a very, very busy program. But when I come back, I will visit with Millridge General Manager Price Bell to discuss their consignment and preview next week's Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale. Stay with me. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Woodbine is gearing up for its biggest day of racing on Sunday, August 22nd, with the 162nd Queen's Plate, a day full of the best in Canadian thoroughbred racing, great fashion, amazing food, and loads of fun. And with Woodbine welcoming fans back with limited capacity, you will want to call today to reserve your seat. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment, along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Live racing is back at Ellis Park with a 31-day Run Happy Meet through September 4th. Admission is free with reserved seating available in the Sky Theater and Clubhouse through EllisParkRacing.com. And for the first time, all Ellis Park races will be shown in high definition. Purses are scheduled to average a record $350,000 a day, including Kentucky-bred maidens running for a track record $51,000. With 16 stakes and a two-year-old program as good as anywhere in the country, Ellis Park is the place to be this summer. Visit EllisParkRacing.com. Ellis Park, feel the thunder.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Since the year 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 36 Grade 1 stakes winners, which have included two Horses of the Year, a Derby winner, and eight Breeders' Cup stakes winners. Her legacy at Millridge has been carried on by her son, Heedley, and grandson, Price. In life, Mom never really saw a challenge too great, a mountain too tall to climb, a road too far to travel, if it were for the benefit of the horse or the thoroughbred horse industry. She would applaud the direction of the industry today with the adoption of the Horse Integrity and Safety Authority, and thank those who have worked endless weeks, months, and years to accomplish this major endeavor. Mom also felt being a woman should be no barrier for what she could accomplish, provided it was accompanied with integrity and effort. She would often say, "This is a man's world. I have to be in it, so let's get busy and get it done." Her loves in life were her family and husband, John, of 49 years, Millridge Farm, and the horses and people associated with it, as well as Keeneland Race Course, which was co-founded by our father in 1936. Mom kept it pretty simple. Take care of the horse, and the horse will take care of you. We heard that often growing up. She would have been incredibly humbled by this award today and would want to thank all those people and horses in her life that made it possible. On behalf of her family, I want to thank the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame for this very special honor. Thank you.
Now it's Reynolds Bell talking about his mother, Alice Headley Chandler, who was inducted into the Hall of Fame yesterday as a pillar of the turf, deservedly so. She did so much for this sport, and she is now forever remembered in a very special place. And I now have the privilege of welcoming her grandson, Price Bell, the general manager of Mill Ridge Farm. He will be busy at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale next week, and he is with me now here on the Equine Forum. Price, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
Doing very well. A very special Saratoga sale for you, not because of your consignment necessarily, although we'll talk about that, but boy, what a morning yesterday, huh?
It sure was, and my Uncle Reynolds, he captured so much of my grandmother and just did a beautiful job and a really special ceremony, top to bottom. You know, it was a wonderful day, and feel so blessed to be able to share it with family and to be able to share it in person. It sure is good to be back and seeing people and seeing horses again and being back in Saratoga. So happy to be here and look forward to the weekend and the next 10 days or so.
Yeah, it's going to be a very busy 10 days for you. And again, we'll touch on that consignment, but I do want to ask you one more question about yesterday, because I've always wondered what this is like. And I'm going to ask Mark Cassie the same question when he joins me at 10:40 Eastern to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. But what's it like to stand there and see your grandmother's name and read about her legacy on a plaque in the Horse Racing Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, it is beyond words, so I will do my best to stumble through it. But you know, my grandmother, to look around and the people who are also enshrined in the Hall of Fame and their dedication to the sport and to horses, the inspiration that they have been, and then to share that with others. I mean, to listen, to Mark's accomplishments and to hear, remind yourself of his beginnings in Indiana and then in Ocala. And I mean, when he shared, I guess he was not able to share, Tina came and pitched it for him about, his mother making, an ultimate sacrifice to encourage him to move in with his dad. I mean, that is really powerful. And then to hear Todd talk about, his success and his team and family. I guess we should say to hear Mike talk about Todd, because Mike did more talking than Todd did, which was so special, their relationship and their friendship, and just to hear it all. I mean, it just, it is beyond words. And I think the best part of the Hall of Fame is, the moments that you have personally there. Like when you go into that room and you look at the plaques and you remind yourself of the accomplishments and the dedication of so many before you. I mean, it's truly inspiring. So it's that, I guess that while sitting there listening to it and just being reminded of it, just is, it's really special and makes you, gets you up the next morning that much quicker, because, there's still a lot to be done and a lot to look forward to and to keep moving forward, because we have such an opportunity with our sport.
Yeah, very well said. He is Price Bell, the general manager at Mill Ridge. Mill Ridge Sales is going to be busy at the 100th edition of the Fasig Tipton Saratoga Sale, which takes place Monday and Tuesday in Saratoga Springs, New York. I talked about the Hall of Fame in my opening statements being an elitist group, and it should be an elite group. If you're a member of the Hall of Fame, you have done something extremely special. And Price, you and the team at Mill Ridge have always done things the right way. And when you show up at a sale, whether it's Saratoga or elsewhere, when people come by your consignment, you're able to look them in the eye and say, hey, we have one heck of a group. You have to see them. And you have it again this year.
Absolutely. No, we've been, you know, we've been very blessed to have great horses come through the farm, come off the farm, and great people year in and year out who help us, you know, take care of them and get them ultimately to the racetrack. You know, I think, you know, our responsibility is to raise good horses that when people buy from us or on behalf of clients we raise for, that they go on with them, that they, you know, that they see what they have in front of them and that they take the next step as they would like into the, whether they be reoffered for two-year-olds or whether they go to the races. And so our, you know, year in and year out, that's our dedication, is to raising good horses the way that, you know, as though we owned them all and we're racing them all. And so that the people who buy from us and take them to the next stage and phase of their life can continue, can carry on with them, and that they hopefully meet the dreams that they saw when they first, you know, saw the horse at the sale or at the farm, and carried, you know, that this game is all about dreams. And so, you know, it's our job to hopefully, you know, give every horse and every owner the opportunity to live that dream.
Tell me a little bit more about the horses you will be offering. It's a bit of a bigger consignment than we're used to seeing from Millridge Sales at the Saratoga sale.
It is, you know, and we feel very blessed to be representing some good friends and good breeders for the first time this year. But we've got five fillies and four colts, you know, and a really interesting, and I think a really high quality group of horses. We sell two on Monday night. Except we're very excited to be here with the first crop of Oscar Performance yearlings. We've got two fillies in the consignment, one to be sold on Monday night, that we raised on the farm, and the other horse on Monday is an Airgate son who is just, you know, a spinning image of his father, just a big, you know, big, strong, good moving horse. And then, on Tuesday, we're excited to have a really nice, handsome, copper penny colored chestnut son of Army Mule, who is an exciting young stallion. You know, he's one of those horses, Army Mule, that you talk to people who work the 2-year-old sale, and they can remember where they were sitting when Army Mule breezed at Timonium. We have two fillies raised by Ken and Sarah Ramsey and Mark Partridge, who are lovely, you know, quality fillies, one by Oscar Performance and one by Frosted. We have another exciting Mendelssohn filly, and we have a really handsome Street Sense colt. Street Sense could have a very big day today, raised by our friends at Blue Heaven Farm, Jamie and then Adam Korndorf. And then to round it out, we've got a nice Malibu Moon colt who is somewhat atypical of a Malibu Moon colt. He's kind of typey. And lastly, a really nice Uncle Mo filly from a deep family that for the Otto family, Tolly Otto, who we've been raising horses for at the farm for a number of years. So, you know, it's certainly deeper and broader than years past, but it's a really quality group that we're excited to bring up here and represent.
You know, every year I talk about the fact that this Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale, it's a selected yearling sale, and it places a premium on both pedigree and confirmation. Talk about the type of horse price that you look to bring to Saratoga if you're going to be successful. What type of horse is it?
You know, it's really a team game. You know, the Fasig inspection crew is as good as it gets, and you know, they come out in April and we show them 50 horses. And it's really our first opportunity to show off our children. You know, I mean, we've been looking at them and, you know, taking meticulous care of them, but they're really the only horses that we've been seeing. So Fasig comes through in April before the Derby, and it's our first opportunity to showcase them. And then we really work it with them. You know, they provide feedback and they kind of help you understand where you set with various horses that they've seen. And then we really work it together to pull together a select high quality physical, you know, racehorse, you know, consignment from the farm. And so it's really a team game. And it's a little bit like Christmas morning, that those days in April when they come out, because again, the spring is first starting to hit in Kentucky. You're getting a few warm days, and then the Fasig crew comes out, and they're, you know, you just get really excited about anticipating the selling season ahead. And it's remarkable how much the horses change from April to today, and just, you know, how good the team at Fasig is, and just kind of, you know, seeing and anticipating what they'll grow into. Because to look around the grounds, I mean, there are really exceptional horses here on the grounds. And we're excited by the group we have that we feel fit in well.
And you should be. Talking with Price Bell, the general manager at Millridge. Millridge Sales represented with 9 yearlings set to go under the gavel Monday and Tuesday evening at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale. Price, we haven't had much of an opportunity to get a gauge on what the yearling sales market might be like this year. We had one sale earlier, the July sale at Fasig Tipton, but this is really the first look at some of the premier horses, some of the selected yearlings that we've had in our sport so far. Where do you see, or what's your prediction for this yearling sales market going forward here in 2021? Where are we?
You know, I'd say cautiously optimistic. You know, obviously people who resell as two-year-olds, pinhook market had a good year, and that's typically a good indicator. People who've made money, you know, buying yearlings and reselling as two-year-olds will typically, you know, they need to reload their inventory. I feel like there's been tremendous success with, you know, West Point has had a great year. You had Little Red Feather win with a really exciting filly yesterday. So the partnership, I mean, Eclipse is, gosh, I was so excited to see they've had nearly $3 million in earnings this year to date, which is, you know, exceptional. So the partnership groups have had some success. I've had a lot of success, and I think that this sale is a great opportunity for them to showcase the yearling buying process. There's a lot of time. It's a beautiful setting. You can go racing. And so, you know, I think that I'd like to think that it is the stage is set for a good sale. I think people in general, you know, we have an incredible sport that is, you know, fueled by dreams, and this is a place and a setting to hopefully, you know, fall in love and have a good time. I think we've all been cooped up for 18 months and are looking forward to being out and, you know, having something to be hopeful for. So.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, Price, listen, I know you're busy this morning. You're showing horses and there's people coming by the barn, so I won't keep you, but really appreciate all of your support of the network. It's a privilege to be able to say we're associated with Millridge and the team and say hello to your dad. And by the way, our friend Stuart Morris, who, of course, is a fellow consigner, he sponsors a segment on the show each week called the Industry Star of the Week. And I cannot think of anybody better than yourself and your dad and the team at Millridge to honor as this week's Industry Star of the Week. So we'll do that here this morning and really appreciate everything you do for the sport.
Well, thank you, Mike, and yourself too. I mean, you all have done an incredible job and, you know, really broadcast the dreams we try and create. So well done, and thanks, Stuart, for his sponsorship. He's a good man. And I remember, you know, in the early 90s, my first trips up to Saratoga, Stuart and his brother Jackson and their dad were just always so gracious and, you know, wonderful. And, you know, it's an incredible group of people that we have the privilege to associate with. So
yeah, enjoy the next week, Price, and good luck next week at the Fasig Tipton sale.
Thanks so much, Mike. Look forward to seeing you.
All right, you too, pal. Price Bell here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And I will remind you that Stuart Morris does indeed offer a boutique full service bloodstock operation, and he wants to thank his owners, his clients, his team. He does it every week. He knows his success is absolutely because of you, and he's had multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, Pacific Gale, Nikki the Vest. Yeah, he's your source if you're looking for success at the highest levels. Visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. When I come back, you're going to hear Todd Pletcher, as he was inducted into the Hall of Fame yesterday. I'll bring you that induction speech. Stay with me. This is the Equine Forum, and this coming up is your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
This is the story of one of the once-living legends of the American turf who, unhappily to relate, outlived his legendary status into an ever-lengthening twilight of economic hardship and poor health, and who, at the age of 69 in a Jacksonville, Oregon nursing home, met the Grim Reaper after a prolonged illness on August 16, 1968. For many years, he had been a hanger-on at New York racetracks, waiting for that one more chance which never came, and dreaming of the glory of the 1920s when he was, quite literally, the toast of Broadway. In that golden age of sport, he was to thoroughbred racing what Babe Ruth was to baseball, Bobby Jones to golf, Bill Tilden to tennis, Red Grange to football, Jack Dempsey to boxing, and Johnny Weissmuller to swimming. Each was the symbol and the very epitome of their particular sport, their names, household words. He first saw the light of day, did our man of the day, so to speak, in Groton, South Dakota, in November 13, 1898, of Norwegian ancestry, and he grew up on a ranch in American Falls, Idaho, where he took to riding horses as naturally as the proverbial duck takes to water. He rode his first official race on January 25, 1918, and won, the first of 968 wins in over 3,600 mounts, who earned nearly $3 million, an enormous amount in that day and age. His lifetime winning percentage was 26%, remarkable. In 1919, his contract was purchased by Commander J.K.L. Ross, for whose Canadian-based stable he rode such stars as Milkmaid, Billy Kelly, and Sir Barton. He later rode for Harry Sinclair's Rancoca stable, and it was in the silks of this stable that his star shot across the heavens of thoroughbred racing with meteoric rapidity. He led the jockey list with Money One in 1921, the year he won the Belmont aboard Grey Lag. And in 1923, the year he won the Derby and Belmont with a leg up on John E. Madden's Zev. His 1923 records of 39 stakes wins and nearly $570,000 in purses were to stand as riding records for more than 20 years. He had a nasty spill at Saratoga in 1924 and a gallstone operation as well, sidelining him for some 8 months. He had trouble getting mounts on his return to the saddle, but to get the mount on Flying Ebony in the Derby, he did, and he won in the slop on that one at Churchill. That same year, he won the Belmont while aboard Mad Play. In 1927, he won the Belmont on Chance Shot for owner Joseph Widener, president of Belmont Park. It was largely under Widener's aegis that he was restored to good standing in March of 1928, after he had been suspended and banned from all tracks in the fall of 1927 for his ride on Bateau in the Pimlico Futurity. In spite of that suspension, he was the leading money-winning rider of 1927. After reinstatement, he had the stomach and weight problems, and he subsequently hung up his tack, as it were, to race and train horses. He encountered financial difficulty in that venture and ultimately bowed to creditors by dispersing his stable in 1929. He came out of retirement to ride for William Woodward Sr. in 1930. That year, he was aboard Gallant Fox, who chalked up a triple crown. That year's win in the Belmont was his fifth in that event. Both rider and horse retired in 1931. Our man came out of retirement for a second time to ride in 1932, chalking up 13 wins. And then, final retirement and the beginning of a long road to abject obscurity. He refused all offers to ride in Europe, and had a brief fling as a chanteur at the Stork Club in New York, plus a stint in radio and as a movie producer, none of those with success. In 1938, when back in the game as a trainer, he saddled stagehand for wins in both the Santa Anita Derby and the Santa Anita Handicap. He was that season's leading money-winning trainer. In 1944, he turned to breeding, but that proved to be a disastrous venture. He once said, quote, "Money and me are incompatible." In 1953, at the age of 55, he got himself down to riding weight and had 10 mounts and won one of those. That victory, to phenomenal acclaim, I might add, was at the old Jamaica racetrack on Long Island, October 14, 1953. The effort to make weight had taken its toll, and from then on until he left New York for Oregon, he lived in a donated room over a Long Island restaurant, eating with friends who relived his past glories. The story of this paragon of saddlesmiths, replete with its ecstasies and agonies, its apogees and perigees, its zeniths and its nadirs of human accomplishment and endeavor, as though reaching out for that one final straw of recognition, is indeed a most sad commentary. It does not detract one single scintilla from the composite accomplishment of this man, accomplishments which stamped him indelibly in giant letters on the pages of racing lore. Our subject of this dissertation was immortalized through the pen of Damon Runyon in the 1920s. Runyon, often watching him ride, penned an ode in testimony to this man titled, "A Guy Named Sandy." He was Earl Sandy.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
This year, the fans choose the finalists. Coming this August, for the first time ever, the fans pick the finalists in four 2021 America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards categories. Favorite racing TV personality, racetrack food, podcast or radio show, and favorite smaller circuit racetrack. Get ready to be heard and to vote on americasbestracing.net.
Consistent success tested over time. There is no better example than Millridge Farm. Founded in 1962 by Alice Chandler, this year's inductee into the Hall of Fame as Pillar of the Turf. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 36 Grade 1 winners, including 8 Breeders' Cup winners and 2 Horses of the Year. Millridge offers its largest and highest quality consignment ever at this year's Fasig Tipton Saratoga Sale, with 9 yearlings by leading stallions and promising first-year sires. And will be showing at Barn 5 on Friday, August 6th. Millridge, standing the test of time.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
If you're looking for the ideal training environment for your yearlings and two-year-olds, look no further than Kirkwood Stables in Camden, South Carolina. Kirkwood's serene setting offers world-class training facilities with all of the amenities owners and trainers seek, including 2 dirt tracks, starting gate, and miles of turf gallops and breeze strips. Watch the drone video at KirkwoodStables.com and see for yourself why Kirkwood is the Southeast's premier training facility.
This is Chris Landeros. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
3/4 and 1, 12 and 2. They are at the top of the stretch. It is Always Careener. Zagil on the outside. Make Mischief is down at the rail. Always Careener tested here by Zagil with an eighth of a mile to the finish. Then it's Clairiere and Make Mischief. It is Zagil who has now taken the lead inside the 16th pole. And we're going to have an upset here in the Mother Goose. Zagil is the winner. And it was close for second between Always Careener and Clairiere.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. John Embriel had the call of the Grade 2 Mother Goose at Belmont on June 26th. Zagil getting the victory for trainer Todd Pletcher under Joel Rosario. They're back again today in the Grade 1 Test Stakes at Saratoga, part of an unbelievable card. And you think about Todd Pletcher. I told you he was officially inducted into the Hall of Fame yesterday. His speech, by the way, and the introduction of Todd Pletcher by his good friend Mike Rapoli coming up in just a moment. Todd has won the Mother Goose 6 times. That equals his mentor, Dwayne Lucas, for most wins all time in the Mother Goose. That victory by Zagil putting him at the top of the list. Would you believe me if I told you it has been since 1999 since Todd has won the Test Stakes? Yeah, he won it in 98 with Jersey Girl, won it again in 99 when Marley Vale has not won it since. Hoping Zagil, who by the way is undefeated in 2 tries at the 7 furlong test distance, will be able to give him win number 3 in that race on a very special weekend for him. All right, well, that comes your way shortly, but time now to get you set to bet the races as we take a look at today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
Today's first bet comes in race 10 at Gulfstream Park. It is the $75,000 Azalea Stakes, 6:08 Eastern is the post. Number one, Princess Secret is 10-1 on the morning line. A 34% win projection from the First Bet app rates 10 points higher than the next closest competitor. Ranks number one in four of the top 12 First Bet handicapping factors for this race. She is a two-time local stakes winner at age two with improving speed figures in her starts at age three. The jockey trainer tandem has $13 and $14 winners from the last 10 combined efforts. Keep an eye on number one, Princess Secret, in race 10 at Gulfstream, today's first bet. And I'm back with Todd Fletcher's Hall of Fame speech in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number one, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, owner Mike Rapoli had the distinct privilege of introducing his good friend Todd Pletcher yesterday at the Hall of Fame inductions in Saratoga Springs, New York. He spoke for 17 minutes before he introduced Todd to the podium, and he had a lot of fun. He made a lot of people laugh. He made a lot of people cry. He talked about their relationship and how they are always there for each other. They have always been there for each other for many, many years, and that is why Todd selected Mike Rapoli to introduce him at this year's Hall of Fame ceremonies. And we don't have time to bring you the entire introduction, so we'll join it in progress, but I think you'll get the gist. Mike Rapoli, fantastic yesterday, introducing the Hall of Famer, Todd Pletcher.
Last year, I had my grandmother, who used to come to all the races. I don't know if you see her in the Rapoli stable hat. Once in a while, she was trampled in between wins, but it's okay. She wasn't doing well last year. One of the first big races that Todd won for me, Vino Rosso, she wasn't there. She passed away peacefully in her sleep on May 2nd, the Kentucky Derby Saturday, at 7:30 in the morning. And there was no Kentucky Derby that day, but what a sign that she passed away on that day. A year later, it looked like we had no shot to get to the Derby, and Todd gets Dynamic One into the Derby. So on a weekend that my family would have spent sad, miserable, you know, Todd did what he did best, gets people to the Derby. And instead of having a very sad weekend, we had the most beautiful weekend, my family. We came in 18th place, okay? Just so you know, there was one scratch, so there's only 19 horses, okay? Okay, so let's be very clear about that. So we beat a horse. I called him the next day, and I thanked him. I said, this was the best effing, forget what that stands for, Derby I've ever had in my life. And I said, man, you have no idea how important this was for my family. You have no idea how much this meant to me. And, you know, I said, right now, combined, we're 0-7 in the Derby. And I said, I'd rather go 0-20 with you than go 1-1 with somebody else. And he said, I think we can do that in 5 years. So we're on our way. All right. So, all right. You know, when you talk about Todd, just quickly, you talk about consistency. I mean, doing what Mark does and Todd does and all the other trainers out here, it's 365 days a year. It's 4 in the morning. It's till 8 at night. It's 18-hour days. Horses don't celebrate Christmas. They don't celebrate Thanksgiving. They have no vacation time. I applaud everybody. I mean, you run a marathon every single day. And what he's done at the highest level consistently is unbelievable. I mean, 7 Eclipse Awards. It's like 30% of the years he's training, he won an Eclipse Award. 17 Gulfstream titles, 15 in a row. Who wins 15 in a row? I mean, it's just amazing. And the year that he didn't win it, in between, check that up. Okay, I'll talk about that later. 14 Saratoga titles. Who wants to win in Saratoga? Everybody wants to win in Saratoga. 14, okay? He won his first Saratoga title in his third year. That's unheard of. Who does that? It's just amazing. 5 Classic, 4 Kentucky Oaks, 2 Travers, and, you know, $400 million. And I think this record is a record that nobody will ever shadow. Over 50 losing Kentucky Derby horses. There is no way anybody, and he's got a lot more in him. So think about that. So, I mean, I got 13 coming my way. Can you imagine how many more we can get? I think he can get to 100. Yeah. You talk about versatility. You talk about the owners. I mean, he's got great owners, but the way he's just got this even keel personality, Joe Cool, even keel, doesn't get overly high, doesn't get overly low, very similar to myself. That's the one thing we have in common. The ability to balance these owners, you know, who are, you know, spending big money on horses. They've been super successful. They know everything. They're the smartest people. Other than me, that's not true. But the other, you know, but, so to be able to do that isn't a feat for 25 years by itself. 11 Breeders' Cup wins, but 8 different divisions. 8 different divisions. He, you know, from Machado to English Channel to Vino Rosso to Uncle Mo, dirt or turf, 4 furlongs. I had from 4 furlongs to 1.75 miles. And Todd said, no, I won the Alan Jerkins. It was 2 miles at one time. So from 4 furlongs to 2 miles, you know, what has this guy mastered? He's mastered winning. He's mastered winning in every, with a filly, with a colt, with a sprinter, with turf, with dirt and everything. I'll tell you, the only thing I know he hasn't done is he has not won a steeplechase race, you know. And we have talked about me claiming one day, and we're going to win one of those one day, too. Trust me. So, you know, and then when you want to talk about, I mean, there will never, ever be a trainer who is the stallion maker that Todd Pletcher is, okay? Unbelievable. Seriously. Okay? And I'm not talking about Paint, Kyle, and Hannah, just so you guys know it. All right. That was more the mare than the sire, trust me, okay? But, you know, from More Than Ready, Spice Town, Uncle Mo, Scat Daddy, Quality Road, now their sons are out there, you know, producing. I mean, he is the greatest stallion maker in the history of the sport. And there's no one that's ever going to do that. And he's just getting started, guys. I mean, it's just amazing. And then, you know, listen, it is a 1 in a million to get into this Hall of Fame. Everybody that's in this Hall of Fame, man, you're 1 in a million, you know. But for me, you know, Todd Pletcher is in the Hall of Fame of the Hall of Famers. He's in that top 1% of being in the Hall of Fame. And to me, it's amazing when I just talk to you guys about what he's done. But I know a lot of people are going to be very surprised here. He's only 54 years old. I thought he was 80, but I mean, he's only 54. Can you believe he's only a year older than me? Nobody can believe that. But, you know, I always thought he was Tracy's father. I didn't know that. So, but honestly, what if he does this for 15 more years or he does it for 20 more years? We're going to have another ceremony for him. And hopefully I'll be in the Hall of Fame, Tom, but that's okay. So, you know, I mean, listen, he's an icon. He's a legend. And he's going to go down as, you know, one of the greatest of all time. You know, for me, what sets him apart is Todd Pletcher, Hall of Fame person. Todd and I had a special day on June 26th of this year. We won the Triple Crown that day. My daughter was 6 years old, and we had a party for her at my house. And if you guys have met my wife, Maria, think about a Billy Madison-type party. That's what we had, okay? So his daughter, Hannah, graduated high school. And so that was the Kentucky Derby. We got the Preakness with Joya's birthday. And then the Belmont Stakes, it was June 26th, is Todd's birthday. So to have a day where he didn't go to the track, and I was a father to my daughter, and he was a father to his daughter, and then the family came back to my house, and we celebrated life. We celebrated the real winner's circle. It was really, really special. And then we turned on the TV, I think he had a horse in the acorn. Oh, I just won a grade one with Giselle, or whatever. So he won a grade one that day, but obviously this day was even more important. He's a Hall of Fame boss. When you go there in the staff, you go there 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, they're there. If they leave him, many successful trainers out there, amazing. He's a Hall of Fame friend, unbelievable. Just a great, great guy that always will make time for you. He's a Hall of Fame son, okay? Big Hall of Fame son. When I speak to Mr. Pletcher, JJ, he'll say, Mike, he's so good, I couldn't even have screwed him up. It's his exact line, you know? And when I speak to Mrs. Pletcher, you know, she said, I had one child, and I stopped at perfection. That's what she always told me. She told me she stopped at perfection. So I have a younger brother. My mother should have done the same thing. Okay. So, he's a great husband. But Tracy is a better wife. Okay. And that's not even debatable, by the way. So when Todd officially made the Hall of Fame, I text Todd and Tracy, and I congratulated both of them because Todd and Tracy made the Hall of Fame today. He doesn't make it without Tracy. Tracy doesn't make it without him. That's an unbelievable team that balances each other out. They're a great team. And without Tracy, he's a great father. You know, I watched these kids in front of me go from being 3 foot tall to 6 foot two quickly. There's Peyton, Kyle, and Todd's favorite, Hannah. Okay. You guys are very lucky, you two boys. If Todd had Hannah first, I don't think you'd be here today. So, thank God you guys were first, but the ability to be a father and say, hey, I'm taking Kyle to Gulfstream. I'm going to spend a couple days just with Kyle. Peyton's going to go to Ocala with me. We're going to spend 2-3 days with him. Hannah's flying today with me to Monmouth, and she's going to come to the Haskell. The way he makes time for his family is amazing. You know, it's just amazing. So, you know, he is, as great as he is probably in a time where athletes and racing ambassadors or, you know, there's so much negative news. There isn't anybody that doesn't, even if you lose to him, you love Todd Pletcher. He represents this sport at the highest level, and nobody can represent this sport any better. If you have an opportunity, go up, talk to him, take a picture, get an autograph, ask him a question. He's amazing. He's a gem to this sport. He's a gem to this industry. I don't think people realize how lucky we are to have a person like Todd Pletcher. So I want to introduce officially. I had this joke for 15 years that I have to let go today. It's real tough. Every time Todd and I over the last 15 years got into a fight, we would argue. I don't know if you guys know, but we debate once in a while. I would always say, even when I thought he was right, what do you know? You're not even a Hall of Famer. Please, leave me alone. That joke is retired today, unfortunately. Okay? My friend, Todd Pletcher.
Thank you, Mike. You actually kept it under half an hour. I'm impressed. I can't tell you how humbled I am to join, you know, this esteemed group. So many of these guys were my childhood heroes, role models, mentors, competitors, guys like Jerry Bailey, who won my first race, Jose Santos, who lost my first race. Jose, don't feel bad. There's been 17,458 more since then. And, of course, Wayne Lucas, great mentor. When I went out, after I went out on my own, the most common question I get is, what is the one thing you learned working for Wayne Lucas? And the answer has evolved over the years. The answer is, there's not one thing. It's everything. Everything matters. Everyone matters. Every horse matters. Every horse owner matters. And I made the mistake in 2004, my first Eclipse Award acceptance speech, of trying to name people and thank people. And I forgot a few, and I've spent the next 17 years regretting it. So I'm not going to mention everyone who's contributed to this. It's been an army. I've been blessed with some of the best team members, coworkers, friends that have contributed so much to this. It really is a team award, in my opinion. Now, you have to get a lot of breaks along the way to get here. And I got a huge break when Wayne Lucas offered me the opportunity to go to work for him. And not only because I consider him to be the greatest trainer of all time, and he had a successful stable and a successful group, but it was an all-star cast of assistant trainers as well. And to learn from those guys, I feel like no one has been more influential in the way that I try to conduct my business than Wayne's son, Jeff. Jeff was a detail-oriented person. He was driven. He was motivated. He was a skilled horseman. And he had the unique ability to make those around him better. And there's no doubt in my mind, if he didn't have a tragic accident, that Jeff would have been inducted into the Hall of Fame years ago. Biggest break of all I got was when I was born to my parents. They've supported me at every level, every step of the way. I know when I told my mom that, you know, I was thinking about going on my own, opening up my own barn, she said, give it your all, and I want to help you. I want to co-sign a loan for you to try to help you get started, and I want you to set up your barn first class, just like Wayne would. So we did that. A couple weeks go by, and we were talking. She said, how's it going? I said, well, it's going pretty well, but it's damned expensive to set up a barn like Wayne. I think we should have taken a bigger loan. But we powered through, and I got started at Hialeah. Gulfstream denied me stalls. Time, I didn't think that was great, but it turned out to be a blessing. And I started off with 7 horses, and 4 of them were owned by my dad and a lady named Betty Massey from Dallas. And now this was key, because not only did I really need those 4 horses, but this was the one account when payroll was getting tight, I could call and ask for a check in advance for next month's training bill, and there was always a FedEx the next day. Of course, training horses is tough on the family life. My wife Tracy, Peyton, Kyle, and Hannah, we've sacrificed a lot. I've missed a lot of soccer games and school nights. But one of the cool things about being a horse trainer is pretty much every day can be bring your kid to work day, and we've shared in a lot of great moments too. I thank you for all your support. And I want to close out by stealing a line from one of my longest supporters, one of my favorite supporters. And Cott Campbell used to always close out with these words. And it's not going to sound nearly as cool coming from me, because he was a cool guy. But most of all, I want to thank the horses, the horses, and the horses. Thank you.
Hall of Fame inductee Todd Pletcher and Mike Rapoli with the introduction. I could listen to that all day long. The usually unflappable Todd Pletcher, emotional, as you might expect, as he's inducted into the Hall of Fame. Mike Rapoli, tremendous in his introduction. Mark Cassie was equally as sensational. He's going to join me coming up at 10:40 Eastern, and you won't hear his speech, but I will talk to him about that emotional day yesterday. We'll talk about his horses coming up later today, too. A lot still to come here on the Equine Forum. I'm going to get you set for hour number two when I come back. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry, and on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of Sire Sires Taprit to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter, Taprit, standing at Gainsway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like meeting friends or traveling. And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit getvaccineanswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
This is Greg Foley, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
At the top of the lane, and it's Kent DeSormo and Twilight Agenda now sent for home. Farm Away can find no more. Best Palace third, then Unbridled, and It's All Greek to Me. But it's Twilight Agenda, well clear in the Pacific Classic as they come to the 16th pole. He's starting to shift out just a little. Best Palace coming after him now. Twilight Agenda, but here comes Best Pal. Best Pal going to catch him at the wire. Best Pal has got Twilight Agenda, and Best Pal and Fat Valenzuela win the $1 million Pacific.
That's Trevor Denman with a call. The 1991 renewal of the Pacific Classic, the brilliant cowbred Best Pal, who took those Golden Eagle silks to victory so many times. And today we honor Best Pal with the Best Pal Stakes, a Grade 2 at Del Mar. It is part of a tremendous program out there, 11 races on the docket where the turf meets the surf. I'm going to visit with Brad Free from the Daily Racing Forum, who covers Del Mar Racing throughout the year. I'll get a chance to talk to him coming up momentarily. Also going to hear our Unsung Hero segment presented by Claiborne in the second hour of the program, and trainer Brendan Walsh coming up at 9:35, 9:40-ish. So stay tuned for that. And then hour three, in the room with Sean Clancy. He sits down for his one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with Jose Santos, Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history, and Hall of Famer Mark Cassie with me at 10:40. So a lot of things still to come. I'll get you set for everything when I come back right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, the 7th day of August, 2021. What a day of racing it is, coast to coast. Three grade ones on the docket at Saratoga. You've got greatest stakes action at Del Mar. No surprise that those two tracks will be in the spotlight. We had the Hall of Fame induction ceremony yesterday. Steve Asmussen equaling Dale Baird at the top of the list in terms of the all-time wins leaders among trainers in thoroughbred racing. Today, Steve Asmussen will try to stand alone atop that list, and you have to think he has a pretty good chance to do it. I believe he has 14 horses entered across four tracks later today, if I'm not mistaken. So he is going to be a very busy man, and you would expect that Steve Asmussen will finally surpass Dale Baird later today. Again, he went 2-for-2 to equal him yesterday. I mean, how good is Steve Asmussen? It's just ridiculous. Poll question today at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and you can always email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. If you don't do social media, you can let me know your thoughts via email. Today's poll question is, should trainer Dale Baird be in the Hall of Fame? He is currently not in there. Should he be in? 71% of you saying, yes, he should be. 29% saying, not even close. Nope, no way he should be included. Interesting debate. Dale Baird, as I mentioned, the all-time wins leader among trainers, settled 9,445 career winners. Steve Asmussen tied him yesterday. Dale Baird did not do it at the highest levels like Steve Asmussen is doing. But should Dale Baird be included in the Hall of Fame? Let me know your thoughts on Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, you can email me, mike@horseracingradio.net. Well, Brad Free does a fantastic job covering racing for the Daily Racing Forum. He's done it for a long time. He is in Southern California. He's up early this morning at Del Mar to be with me. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me.
Let me hit you with the poll question right off the bat. Should Dale Baird be in the Hall of Fame?
He should be if he gets enough support. I know that's kind of a wishy-washy answer, but I think there's plenty of people out there that are not in the Hall of Fame that should be. The late, great Bruce Headley, in my opinion, is one of the greatest trainers that California racing has ever seen, and I don't think he has a chance to ever make the Hall of Fame. I think Chris Clement should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, if he gets enough support, Dale Baird should be in there. But, you know, I can't really push my opinion on the voting electorate. So I'm trying to middle of the road in here, Mike. But if he gets the support, yeah. Would I vote for him? Yeah, I probably would.
Yeah, I think when you win that many races, I know he didn't do it at the highest levels like Asmussen has, but you win that many races, you have talent, you are elite in this sport of thoroughbred racing, and I think that's what the Hall of Fame is supposed to represent. Would you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, but let's face facts. Steve Asmussen does it at the highest level, but a great majority of his wins were in races that, you know, don't get a whole lot of notoriety. So to compile the type of stats,
yeah,
that Steve Asmussen and Dale Baird have over the years requires more than just a bunch of grade one winners. And I give Steve Asmussen all the credit in the world. He's one of the greatest trainers in the history of the game. But a lot of his wins have been in claiming races, allowance races, maiden races, same as Dale Baird. So sheer volume of victories, I think, is, you know, the more we discuss Dale Baird, I think that Mikey might be right. Maybe he does belong in the Hall of Fame.
Brad Free from the Daily Racing Forum with me from Del Mar on this Saturday morning. Brad, another big day where the turf meets the surf. A couple of graded stakes on the docket today. This meet is you know, there's always that debate. Are you a Del Mar person or a Saratoga person, right? And I don't know how you separate the two. I grew up next to Saratoga, so I lean that direction, but I have also been to Del Mar several times, and the two tracks, I mean, my God, you talk about great racing and great connections. They have it all.
Well, they both have it all, and it's the two premier meets of the season, actually. I know that we still have, you know, the Breeders' Cup around the corner in fall, but Saratoga and Del Mar offer some things that no other meet does, including the emergence of two-year-olds. That's one of the funnest things about the summer season is the two-year-olds. Can they make a splash? How good are they? Can they handle the move from maiden to graded stakes races? And, you know, there are two. I've never been to Saratoga when the races have been run. So, you know, I'm a California guy through and through. I would probably, you know, be a homer and say that, well, Del Mar's the best, but I've never experienced Saratoga. And from what I hear, it's fantastic. I do know this. I love to watch the races from Saratoga. But my heart is always down here in Del Mar, California for the summer meet. And we have a couple of good graded stakes races today, the Best Pal and the Yellow Ribbon.
Yeah, Best Pal was one of my favorite horses, too. I mean, just so good. I loved a lot of those Golden Eagle horses, but Best Pal was one that captured me early on.
Well, he was an amazing horse. I think he won the very first Pacific Classic as a three-year-old, owned and bred by John Mabee, initially trained by Ian Jory. Gary Jones trained him for a while. Richard Mandela trained him for a while. And Best Pal, Gelbert, son of Habitoni, he was an incredible racehorse from the time he was two all the way through the end of his career. And it's nice that Del Mar has a race named in his honor. And the Best Pal has been won by some pretty good horses over the years. Nyquist won it a few years ago, looking at Lucky. So it's kind of an early indication of class, and we're going to find out a little bit more about these two-year-olds today. A key defection out of the race, by now everybody knows that Big City Lights, whose first two starts at Santa Anita this year, were outstanding. He won by a combined margin of nearly 20 lengths. He did not enter the Best Pal as expected. His most recent workout, he didn't come out of the workout like his connections had hoped, and so they skipped today's race and to train him into the futurity on September 6th. But a decent field today in the Best Pal. I don't really know how good they are. We're gonna find out if the hype on Papa Cat is warranted, trained by Mark Cassie. But going in, it looks like an evenly matched bunch of two-year-olds, mostly with mare maiden wins on their to their credit.
Yeah, Papa Cap 8-5 on the morning line. That is the morning line favorite in the Best Pal. Bet on Mookie down toward the inside, also getting some respect in here, 5-2 on the morning line for Pete Miller. Walk me through some of the contenders in here, Brad.
Well, there's not a whole lot of speed in here, the truth of the matter is, which is a little bit unusual for a two-year-old stakes race. Bet on Mookie from the inside. He's quick enough to establish position inside. And Papa Cap. Those are the two. I think those are the two that could potentially dominate the race. Papa Cap, we haven't seen him since early May. He's not bred to be a sprinter, and trainer Mark Cassie debuted him going 5 furlongs, and he popped the gate, wired the field, and won for fun. He's been training very well over the Del Mar racetrack. Bet on Mookie has two races under his belt. His big win second time out was on grass, but his connections believe that he just moved forward having had a start rather than the move to grass. So Bet on Mookie is quick. Papa Cap is fast as well, and it looks like those two could dominate the race up front. But I'm a little bit interested in the cowbred Phineas, number 4 Phineas, who's listed at 3-1. He's the third choice on the morning line. He's a cowbred by Stay Thirsty, trained by Walter Solis. They've been pointing him to the Best Pal ever since early June when he won a cowbred maiden race rallying from last. And, you know, the two-year-olds out here are not earning big figures yet. So I wouldn't hold that 59 buyer speed figure against Phineas. He did it the right way. He's been aiming to this race ever since then. And Phineas will be running late. Those are really what appears to be the three top contenders. But I expect Papa Cap to be very tough to beat. If he is as good as his maiden win and as good as connections believe, he'll have to catch Bet on Mookie on the rail and hold off Phineas rallying from behind. Phineas, by the way, ridden by Umberto Rispoli, who is due for some luck after a debacle yesterday in the Grade 2 Sorrento. He was on the 6-5 favorite, a filly, 2-year-old filly named Smash Ticket. She broke slowly for the third time in three starts, and she was eliminated, finished more than 13 lengths behind a couple of very nice fillies named Elm Drive and Edith. So Rispoli looking for some better fortune this afternoon than he encountered yesterday afternoon in the two-year-old filly stakes.
The Grade 2 Best Pal is race number 9606 Pacific Time. That's 9:06 for those of you here on the East Coast. It will be followed as race 10 by the Grade 2 Yellow Ribbon Handicap, a much different scenario here. These are older fillies and mares, mile and a 16th on the grass course at Del Mar, and that is a beautiful grass course, by the way. Brad, how'd you see this one?
This is the deepest field of filly mare grass races that has been assembled this year in California. It's a fantastic betting race. Even if you like the favorite, I picked the favorite on top. She's the horse to beat, number 9, Maximum Rage. She's listed as the 7-2 favorite. You can make a case literally for every single starter in this field. Maximum Rate is a Grade 1 winner. She won the Gambly last time out. She has been, that was at Santa Anita, has aimed toward the Yellow Ribbon ever since then. And if she can run two alike, she should be right there. But she faces a pretty good rival named Charmaine's Mia, who reeled off three consecutive front-running, pace-pressing wins early this year at Santa Anita. And then she got involved in a speed duel last time out and chucked it at finished sixth. Anyway, she's running this afternoon, Charmaine's Mia, as the second choice on the morning line. The biggest challenge facing Charmaine's Mia is this turf course this summer at Del Mar has been just swallowing the speed. Time after time after time, grass routes have been won by a horse sweeping from the back of the pack, and front runners have not won their fair share. I think there's only been two wire-to-wire winners in grass routes this summer at Del Mar. And Charmaine Zia, not only does she face a tough course profile, but there are other front-running types in here, including Laura's Light, Raymundo's Secret, her stablemate. So Charmaine Zia, her trainer, Phil D'Amato, believes she can sit off the pace. It's just a question of whether her upfront style will be as effective at Del Mar as it was this winter at Santa Anita. A couple of long shots that I think have a really big look, and they're both Grade 1 or Group 1 winners. Brooke finished second last time out in a restricted stakes race. She is rounding into form for trainer Mike McCarthy. And Keeper of the Stars ran sensationally last time out, finishing fourth in the game. She was the one that kind of dueled Charmaine's Mia into defeat. And she hung around and finished fourth, Keeper of the Stars did. So if she can ration her speed a little bit better, I think that she has a chance to outrun her odds. A couple of live long shots at 12-1, Brooke and Keeper of the Stars. But Maximum Rate enters this race in top form with a closing style that suits the course profile. And she's probably the right horse as the most probable winner.
Well, you can see why I asked Brad Free to come on and talk about Del Mar. He is sensational. He knows everything happening there where the turf meets the surf, and he just walked you through the Best Pal and the Grade 2 Yellow Ribbon. The Yellow Ribbon race 10, 6:36 Pacific Time, 9:36 Eastern. You can follow Brad on Twitter at BradFree1 and read his pieces in the Daily Racing Form. Brad, listen, really appreciate you getting up early. I know you're a morning person anyway, probably much more so than I am. But I appreciate the visit here this morning. Fantastic stuff, and all the best later today.
Mike, anytime. I look forward to talking to you again. Good luck today.
You too. Brad Free here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. When I come back, it's this week's edition of Unsung Heroes, and still to come here in the second hour of the program, trainer Brendan Walsh talking about Maxfield, his horses at Ellis Park and elsewhere. It's a busy day for Brendan. We'll talk to him coming up in just a little bit. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The richest meet in Oak Lawn's history begins Friday, December 3rd through Sunday, May 8th. The 66-day meet will offer more than $45 million in purses with 36 stakes races totaling $12.3 million. And all allowance races are now worth $100,000. Oak Lawn boasts the richest Triple Crown Prep Series in the country, highlighted by the $1 million Rebel on Friday, February 26th, and the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby Saturday, April 2nd, now offering a purse of $1.25 million. Learn more at oaklawn.com.
After an unprecedented year apart, the time has finally come to say, welcome back, fans, to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Welcome back to the prestige and excitement to witnessing history firsthand. As the world's most majestic athletes look to be crowned champion in 14 thrilling Breeders' Cup races, and over $31 million in purses and awards waits across the finish line. On November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup will welcome it all back. The world's best thoroughbreds, the brightest stars, and the most passionate fans. An experience that's a breed apart. Tickets on sale now at BreedersCup.com/tickets.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
American Experiment is holding on to the lead here and, in fact, has gotten away to lead by three. Then Fan the Fire, Slipstream, Life is Great, and Bad to the Bones. American Experiment wins first out and won by five.
American Experiment, a two-year-old colt from the second crop of Darley Stallion Nyquist, was impressive on debut at Saratoga on July 30th for trainer Steve Asmussen, earning a 79 buyer, making American Experiment your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Nyquist, an Eclipse champion at two when he won three Grade Ones, including the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Nyquist had four Grade One juveniles in his first crop last year. No freshman sire has ever had more. Learn more about Nyquist and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters Champion!
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to eight. Three, two, one. And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Well, the sport of thoroughbred racing is filled with unsung heroes, the individuals who work tirelessly behind the scenes 365 days a year and rarely find themselves in the headlines or in the limelight. And today, I have the privilege to visit with yet another unsung hero here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Junior McFarlane, who has worked with Jimmy Jerkins and his dad, the Chief, for many, many years. He shows up every morning at the barn, he grooms the horses, and he does it in such a manner that he is this week's unsung hero. Junior, appreciate the visit, my friend.
You're so welcome, sir.
Yeah, excited to hear your story. And you know, I asked listeners if they had anybody that they felt was worthy and deserved to be an unsung hero on this particular segment, if they would email the show and let me know. And Ed Sehan was kind enough to send me your information and your name, so here we are in touch, and I'm excited to hear your story. Where did it all begin for you, Junior?
Well, you know, I was actually in the city, you know, working in some plumbing fields, you know, and business got slow, you know, like 30 years ago, you know. So I always loved horses and wanted to be among horses and stuff like that. So after being laid off and didn't have any income or whatever, just decided to go to Belmont Park and, you know, call up Mr. Jerkins at the main gate, you know, to have a little talk with him to see if he could give me a job, knowing that I didn't have any experience or nothing. But I always read about Alan Jerkins and always heard that he was a great man and one of the best trainer around, so I decided to see him, you know. So I went there one afternoon about 12:30 and asked the security to page him, and they paged him, and he came to the gate, you know, looking all strange. I said, who want to see me now? I said, you know, and I said, well, look, man, I said, I want to see you, sir. I heard that you're a very good person and you're one of the best trainer in the country. So I just decided to talk to you and see if you could have anything for me to do around the barn. And he said, yeah. Then Alan Jerkin asked me, you know, do you have any experience with horses? Do you know how to rub horses? So I said to him that, you know, I don't know. What do you mean, like rub your hand on the horses? And he laughed and said, oh, come on. In my whole stage right now, I'm supposed to teach a person how to groom a horse. So I said, no, Alan Jerkin, that's what you mean, groom them? Yes, I can. And he said, you know what? You looks like a guy that is willing and you want to learn. So here's $20. Come back to work 6 o'clock in the morning and I'll find something for you to do. You know, so after then, you know, I was so excited about it, you know, knowing that I'm going to do what I like, what I always wanted to do. So I went home and I was really excited. I told my child's mother that, you know, I think I'm get a job and everything is going to be okay. And everybody was excited. So I went back to work in the morning and the chief had me around, you know, raking up and cleaning up and, you know, walking horses. Okay. Within 2 weeks, you know, he's had me like rubbing horses and, you know, cleaning stalls and stuff like that. And within 2 weeks, he gave me a real good horse by the name of Gringo Pilot, you know, and I start taking care of him. And first time he ran, he won for me. And then right after that, you know, everything that I put my hands on was just winning, you know. So I spent like about 5 years with the chief, and Jimmy Jerkin was the assistant. And Jimmy Jerkin asked me, you know, if I wanted to go with him because he's going to go on his own to start training his horses. So I said, great, you know. So Jimmy Jerkins and I went on our own about 1996. And from there on, he had a horse by the name of 9th Innings that the chief gave him. Was a maiden filly that never run before, but that was one of his first horse he gave him, which became his first winner in his career that I rubbed. Her name is 9th Innings and owned by Peter Blum, apparently the owner of the Kentucky Derby this year, you know.
Yeah.
So after that, I went with Jimmy Jerkin. I have nothing but success, you know, win a lot of grade one races for the guy. You know, he treats me real decent, you know. And then, you know, just caring for the horses, you know, just gives me a pleasure. They're very gentle animals, you know. And you just dream to just wake up and go see them and stuff like that, you know, to take care of them. And, you know, it's just all started like that. And, you know, I take care of a lot of great horses, you know, like Corinthians, you know, Art Schiller, you know, Green Light Go. And so many of them. That's You, Miss Blue, you know, Preservationist, you could name them all. But it's just a pleasure doing that. And, you know, it just fills my heart to know how it's all started and how it all worked out for me. So grateful.
Yeah, and you should be, Junior. It's been quite a ride. When you describe to people what the relationship is like between a groom and a horse, that is a very special bond, especially when it comes to a horse that's a really good horse, like you just mentioned. How do you describe it? What's that bond like?
Oh, it is a special bond because, you know, when you've been around a horse every day, he looks forward for your care, you know, and your tender touch. And, you know, the more love you show a horse, the more he puts out for you. They know when you're not, you know, fond of them, and you know, you just have to show them a lot of love, and you know, and do your job right, and they'll really respond to you. You know, it means everything to me. They do.
Is it hard when they retire and they go to stud and you don't get to see them anymore?
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah, very hard. Yeah. I got quite a few of them that, you know, really they ease with me now. That makes me break down, like Corinthian, Preservationist, you know, that seems a little... Those horses, you know, they were really my love. I really look forward to, you know, see those horses in the morning. So, you know, after their days were over, and I have to take them to the truck and, you know, kiss them goodbye or give them a candy. You know, that's real tough, you know. But you know, they're in a better place, and you know, they're going to enjoy life. So you just got to just move on, you know.
Talking with Groom Junior McFarlane here on Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne, and he truly is an unsung hero in this sport. As you heard him say, he started with the Chief, now works with Jimmy Jerkins, his son, since 1997. What kind of teacher, Junior, was the Chief?
Oh, excellence. Was very tough. He was very tough, but he wanted everybody to get a heads up in life. You know, he didn't care who you are, whether you have experience or you know anything. You know, he just helped a lot of people, and just willing to see people move up in life, and in other words, give them a chance. You know, he was just a great man, a great human being.
How do you describe working with Jimmy then, as opposed to working with his dad? What's the same? What's different?
You know, Jimmy is almost the same like his father. You know, he takes a lot of the same good and bad qualities from his father. You know, we all got good and bad qualities in us, you know, and we always talk about the good, we never talk about the bad. But, you know, Jimmy Jerkins is just like his father. You know, he helps a lot of people, and, you know, Jimmy and I have a really good bond together. You know, he always looked out for me in every way he can. He makes sure that I have all his best horses and stuff like that. You know, if there's a good horse coming to barn, I'm the first one that, you know, he'll tell about it and make sure it's in my stall. And, you know, he's a very great guy, you know, very great guy. I love him to death.
Junior, what's your typical day like? It obviously starts early, but what's the day like for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, for me, my days start about 3:30 in the morning. You know, just get up, make my coffee. I run over to the Dunkin' Donuts and get my coffee, and I'm back in the barn like about 4:10. You know, first thing I do, I give each one of my horses a candy and a little hug, and you know, they start nickering as soon as I walk in the shed road. It's pitch dark, and I'm the only one in there that time. You know, so I just start turning on lights and stuff like that. They all start nickering and calling, you know, because they're used to that candy and that love in the morning. They know their master is there, you know. So I just started, like, tying each of them up to the back in the stall and, you know, start cleaning each one's stall, you know, which takes about 10 minutes per stall. I usually take care of 4 or 5 horses, you know. And then after that, you know, at about 5:30, you have to start, you know, getting the first horse ready to go to the track to train, you know, and finish training about 10:30 in the morning, you know. Then you have to start cleaning them up and doing up their legs and massaging them. At about 11 o'clock, you know, you make their feed and give them their food and stuff like that. After that, we get a break from then until about 3 o'clock. You got to go back again and clean their stall and give them fresh water, feed them about 4 o'clock, 4:30, you know, and then that's actually it for the day, you know, until the next morning again.
Did you ever give any thought, Junior, to maybe training horses on your own someday?
Oh, definitely, yes. Definitely, yes. I would like to own a horse and train one on my own. I still have a lot to learn, but I think I could do it. I have a lot of experience from the Chief and Jimmy, you know. So I would like to get a chance one day to do this on my own.
Well, you've certainly learned from two of the best. If somebody comes to you, Junior, and they say, hey, I want to get into racing, and I think that I'd like to start by grooming horses and learning all I can, what advice do you give them? What do you tell them about getting started to be a groom?
Well, you have to love what you love, what you're going to do. You have to, you know, you have to have passion. You have to have care for the horses, and don't get in it if you're not going to love what you do. If you're not going to love the horses, don't even get into it. You know, because they need a lot of care and attention. You know, and you just have to love them and give them all the bond you can, and you know, sacrifice and put horses first, and you will achieve what you want.
Junior, I'll ask you one more question before I let you go. You've obviously worked your tail off to get to the point where you are today, and you weren't shy about going up to the Chief and asking him for a job, which I think is just spectacular. He accommodated, and now you're in a great position. And I guess I'll ask you this. What is it that you're most proud of when you think back on everything you've accomplished in working with the Chief and working with Jimmy?
Well, the experience, you know, the knowledge that, you know, I really achieved by spending the time, you know, in my career with them. You know, I walk around the racetrack, you know, it gives me joy to hear the people say, you know, that's the best groom on the racetrack. And, you know, everywhere I go, you know, people always tell me that. I've seen owners, you know, and everybody always tell me that, you know, and it gives me joy to see people acknowledge what I do and, you know, and see the success that I have with horses, you know. It does, you know.
Well, Junior, on behalf of Horse Racing Radio Network and our entire industry, thank you for doing what you do. Keep up the wonderful work, and it has been such a delight to spend some time with you here this morning. Congratulations on being this week's unsung hero, my friend.
Thank you very much for the exposure, and may God bless you, and you have a great day.
All right, you too, my friend. Junior McFarlane, longtime groom, as you heard, for the Chief, Alan Jerkins, and now working with his son, Jimmy Jerkins, since 1997, and what a relationship it's been. I'll be back after this word from Claiborne.
Eclipse champion Blame. Among sires with less than 10 crops, he has more Grade 1 winners than any stallion standing under $100,000, including Grade 1 winners Nadal, Marley's Freedom, Fault, Abscond, and French Classic winner Singa. Plus these recent standout performers. With success on the track and with yearlings bringing up to $400,000, this proven son of Arch is truly a gold value stallion. Blame, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Well, I tell you each week after that segment that it is such a privilege to be able to bring you those types of stories, and our sport is absolutely filled with unsung heroes like Junior. If you know someone you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero in our sport, nominate them today by emailing their story directly to me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will do my absolute best to get them on those programs and to recognize them in the Unsung Heroes segments in the weeks and the months ahead. When I come back, I'll turn our attention to trainer Brendan Walsh as he joins me live from Saratoga in advance of today's Grade 1 Whitney. This is the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
If you're looking for the ideal training environment for your yearlings and two-year-olds, look no further than Kirkwood Stables in Camden, South Carolina. Kirkwood's serene setting offers world-class training facilities with all of the amenities owners and trainers seek, including two dirt tracks, starting gate, and miles of turf gallops and breeze strips. Watch the drone video at kirkwoodstables.com and see for yourself why Kirkwood is the Southeast's premier training facility.
Championship Racing is at legendary Pimlico Racecourse. Watch and wager as Maryland's best compete in a Saturday Summer Stakes campaign worth nearly $1.5 million in purses, culminating on August 21st with a salute to all things Maryland at the Maryland Pride Maryland Strong Celebration. The Pimlico meet offers live racing Friday through Sunday with a regular post time of 12:40 p.m. Visit the track or catch the live stream at pimlico.com.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. A pair of turf stakes, the Georgian Bay and Lake Huron, will share the spotlight on Saturday's 11-race card at Woodbine. The 5-furlong inner turf events are part of the Ontario Sire Heritage Series, a new 8-leg stakes series open to Ontario Sire 3-year-olds to be contested at Woodbine and Fort Erie racetracks. With a total purse structure of $750,000, the Heritage Series will feature a total of 4 races, 3 opening legs and 1 final for both 3-year-old colts and 3-year-old fillies that are sustained to the Ontario Sires Stakes program. First out of the gate on Saturday is the $80,000 Georgian Bay, which has attracted 6 fillies. Carded as race 3, the wide-open affair includes Benny's Button. Trainer Beverly Chubb, who co-owns the filly with breeder Shamrock Stable, had the bay well-prepared for her career beau on July 3rd. Sent off at 19-1, Benny's Button grabbed the early lead and turned a 1.5-length advantage at the stretch call into a 3.25-length victory in a final time of 57.54. The second stakes of the afternoon, the Lake Huron, is slated as race 9. It's drawn a field of 6 hopefuls, including Dragon's Brew. Trained by Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame inductee Robert Tiller, the gelding is 3-0-1 from 7 lifetime starts, with a 1-0-1 mark from 3 turf engagements. The grass win, however, came in his most recent start, a 6-furlong trek over the E.P. Taylor Turf Course on July 17th. First post today is 1:10 p.m., and that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Ever Rider has the lead as they approach the top of the stretch. Carey Street, though, looking for room on the inside, and those two turn for home. And here comes Carey Street down at the rail. Ever Rider on the outside. Those two coming down to the final furlong. Ever Rider by a neck. Carey Street under a full-out drive on the inside. Dramatic stretch run again in the Greenwood Cup. Carey Street on the inside is taking the lead with a 16 to go. Miguel Meda, 25-1. Hello, Carey Street, an upset winner. Ever Rider was second, and then Micromanage and Call Me George.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. That was Carey Street winning the Grade 3 Greenwood Cup Stakes back in 2014 for trainer Brendan Walsh. Now, why did I play that race? Because it was the very first graded stakes victory for Brendan in his training career. There have been many, many more since that day, and he continues to saddle big horse after big horse, including Maxfield, who goes to the post in today's Grade 1 Whitney at Saratoga. And Brendan is with me live from Saratoga this morning. Brendan, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
How about that trip down memory lane? What do you remember about that day?
I know, yeah. Well, remember it like it was yesterday, Mike, to be honest. You know, it was great. We were thrilled. You know, he was a good horse. Like you said, he was our first graded stake winner, and he went on to do some great things and kept us in the game at a time when we were struggling a little bit too. So, you know, he'll always have a place in our hearts, you know.
Did you find, Brendan, that after that victory, your phone started ringing, you started to get people talking more about Brendan Walsh and sending you a few more horses here and there? Did you find that it was almost an immediate increase in attention after that?
Yeah, well, he went on, thankfully, Mike, he went on that fall and he won the... Well, was the old Breeders' Cup Marathon as well. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely was a good, you know, he definitely did more for us than probably any horse has done. You know, he put us on the map initially, and kind of got the whole thing going. But yeah, I mean, that's the best form of advertising, right? Is when you can win these type of races.
And now you're sitting here with a horse that's among the favorites in the Grade 1 Whitney. You have a horse in the Grade 2 Glens Falls Stakes at Saratoga today. You have horses running a stakes race at Ellis Park today and tomorrow. Do you ever just stop and look back and say, oh my goodness, how did I ever get here?
I do all the time, Mike. It's kind of it's daunting to look back at it and wonder how did it actually happen? Because I think if I was told I had to go through it again, I don't know that I would even try. But no, I don't mean that. It's been great. You know, it's nice to have a horse like this guy today. You know, that's what we're all in the game for, is to have a horse like him, you know, a top horse. And, you know, hopefully, I don't know if there will be any many as nice as him, but, you know, you're always striving for the next one, I guess.
You know, it's funny, you catch a five-horse field in the Whitney, and you go, okay, cool, we're only going to have to beat four other horses. And then you look at the past performances, and you see Nick's Go in there. You see the champion three-year-old filly Swiss Skydiver in there. You see Silver State in there for Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen, the all-time leading trainer in the history of thoroughbred racing. And you have to go, oh, my goodness, what do I have to do to catch a break, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it's a tough race, but, you know, it's the Whitney. It's Saratoga.
Yeah.
You know, no grade one, absolutely no grade one is easy. You know, and it'll be a great test for Max today. You know, and I think he's up to, you know, he's ready for this now. I'm not going to turn around afterwards and say, oh, well, maybe he wasn't ready for it. You know, we finally got some seasoning into the horse and, you know, he's been doing great. Which I think he showed his last couple of runs. And you know, I don't think we'll have any excuses from that point of view if things don't work out today. You know, I think he's ready to do this and to take on these type of horses. And hopefully he proves that he is good enough to run with the very best of them.
What are some of the things, Brendan, that you've been looking for in Maxfield since that win in the Stephen Foster that tell you that he's ready to fire a big shot here today?
You know, he's very level horse temperamentally, Mike. You know, he came out of his race good, as he does, and you know, he's done great since. He's done really well at Saratoga, which I think horses can do for some reason when they come up here. I don't know if it's the cooler weather or the water or what, but horses just seem to do, certain horses seem to do awfully well here. You know, I was talking to my assistant yesterday. We were talking about how much he's eating up here. I mean, it's scary the amount of food that this horse consumes, you know, like stuff like that. And then his work's been very good. He's done great physically. He's moving great. His works have been spot on. You know, we've gotten to do exactly what we want to do. And I think when you're able to do that, then, you know, you show up on the day and, you know, you've given it your best shot. And you know, after that, it's up to him and up to Jose.
There doesn't appear to be much other speed to keep Nick's Go company on the front end. And we know how dangerous he can be when he's loose on the lead. He loves this this particular distance. He's 2 for 2 at the distance. Do you do anything different or have a different conversation with Jose Ortiz, knowing that, okay, we can't let this horse get too far out in front? Or do you just stick to your game plan and say, hey, we're going to take our shot that we can run him down late?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we need to change, you know, like Nick's Go, he doesn't need to change his plan. I don't think we need to change ours. You know, he probably is the lone speed there, but I don't think that Kenny McPeak's filly is going to be a million miles away from him. I don't think that Steve Askison's horse is going to be too far away from him. So, you know, he probably will be on the lead, but if he tries to slow it down or that, I think they're going to be there where they can jump on him. You know, I don't think he's going to get an easy lead per se. You know, and my horse probably isn't going to be a million miles away from him either.
Yeah, good stuff. Talking with Brendan Walsh here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Brendan, you also send out Temple City Terror in the Grade 2 Glens Falls. Tell me a little bit more about Temple City Terror.
Well, she's just been a great filly to have, Mike. She's, you know, just a hard-trying filly, a hard-knocking filly, always has been. It took her a long time to break her maiden, but, you know, she was always one of these fillies. Once she matured and got a little stronger, she was always going to get a little better. She loves to train. I think since we stretched her out, you know, she won the stake, obviously, at Churchill the first time we stretched her out. She beat Delica. Delica beat her the last day at Delaware. You know, we didn't have the greatest trip that day. We had to take her on again, as well as two or three other really nice fillies. But I think she's done well since Delaware, and she's done well up here as well. And I think she's sitting on a good race, and we'll just have to see whether it's going to be good enough.
Well, we'll find out later today. You're going to be busy at Ellis Park too, Brendan, even though you can't be in two places at one time. But you have a couple of horses entered in the Kentucky Downs preview stakes today. You have four more horses entered in those respective stakes races tomorrow at Ellis Park too. Kind of walk me through some of those horses. I know Ethical Judgment will go to the post today in the Dueling Grounds Derby, and then Born Great in the Kentucky Downs Preview Turf Sprint Stakes. Tell me more about them.
Yeah, they're two nice horses. Ethical Judgment has been a solid horse since we started with him. You know, we went to run him on grass. He did run on grass initially and was second, I believe, in his maiden first time out. And then he won an off-turf maiden at Keeneland. And we kind of went the dirt route, ran the Ohio Derby, ran a nice race. We've always toyed, though, with bringing him back to the turf. And this race today looked like a good spot to run him back in. You know, with a view to maybe going to the race at Kentucky Downs next time out. But he's a lovely horse. He seems like he goes on both surfaces. Always runs a good race, so he shouldn't be too far away today. And then Born Grace, you know, another solid horse. The 5.5 today is probably as sharp as he needs to go, but he does love Kentucky Downs. He won twice there last year in a week. You know, the 6.5 there hits him right between the eyes. So hopefully we might get away with the 5.5 today, even though it is a tough spot. But I think he can be very competitive. He was unlucky his last start at Churchill not to quite get there. But hopefully, you know, he was coming off a layoff. Hopefully he'll be a little sharper today. And you know, we'll see. Maybe he can get the job done.
Well, Brendan, you've always been a big supporter of the racing at Ellis Park and, of course, at Kentucky Downs, too. I know you're a big fan. People will forget that Maxfield actually started his young career by training at Ellis Park before he went on to all of his greatest stakes glory. So you've been an advocate for this particular racetrack and that surface for a very long time.
Yeah, no, we've had two-year-olds in Ellis the last few years, Mike. You know, it's a great surface down there. You know, it's nice and quiet down there. It's actually a nice place. In the mornings, it's a nice place to train. You know, and the two-year-olds have always done well down there. So, you know, and of course, these races are a nice lead up to Kentucky Downs, which we always like a bit of Kentucky Downs as well, Mike. So, you know, it all intertwines pretty good.
Yeah, and the money down there at Kentucky Downs doesn't hurt either, does it?
No, it doesn't. It's always an attraction as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, go get some more money in the bankroll today with those horses at Saratoga and at Ellis Park, and we'll continue to talk more as we move forward down the road to the Breeders' Cup, my friend. But good luck today. We'll be cheering for you.
Thanks very much, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, there we go. Talking with Brendan Walsh here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Going to go ahead and get to another break. When I come back, I will, well, tell you a little bit more about what's ahead in hour number three. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Standing at the edge of a rocky shore, you breathe in the cool, salty air, watching the sun disappear on the horizon. Across the globe, someone begins their day along a sandy beach, listening to the rhythm of the crashing waves. You each envision a world beneath the water, vibrant life in every imaginable form. Now, imagine it's all gone. What was once a place of wonder and beauty is now a dull, lifeless wasteland. Food, jobs, medicine, all gifts from the ocean, all gone. Time is running out to protect our oceans. And without our love, everything the oceans provide can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our oceans. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
You heard trainer Brendan Walsh in the last segment talking about his enthusiasm and love of racing at Ellis Park. Well, Ellis coming out with another announcement this past week, too. This is really cool. Saturday, August 14th, mark your calendars, D-Wayne and Dale. A conversation set for 11 a.m. Central in the Ellis Park Beer Garden Pavilion. That should be fantastic. D-Wayne Lucas, Dale Romans sitting there in a conversation with each other. Don't miss it. Saturday, August 14th, coming up at Ellis Park. Want to remind you, too, that we are closing in on the start of archery season for deer here in the state of Kentucky. And as people know, I'm a huge bow hunter, deer hunter. I really enjoy being in the outdoors. And Whitetail Heaven Outfitters, their elite outdoor superstore, which is in Nicholasville, Kentucky, has everything you need to get ready for the season. They are located just a few miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, and the Elite Outdoor Superstore has absolutely everything you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, so much more, even two indoor archery ranges to get you ready for the season. So stop in and see them today. It is the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. You will not be disappointed. I can promise you that. All right. Well, that's going to do it. For the second hour of today's show, 2 hours down, one to go, and still plenty more to come in hour three, which begins with our weekly edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy coming up in just a few minutes, and it's one that you will not want to miss. Sean sits down with Hall of Fame jockey Jose Santos for a unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation, and it's spectacular. Then at 10:25 Eastern, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history, and I will wrap up the show by going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with dual Hall of Fame trainer Mark Cassie, as he was officially inducted yesterday at the Humphrey S. Finney Pavilion in Saratoga Springs, and it was an emotional speech. I'll talk to him about that. I will talk to him about his horses coming up later today. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219 XM 201 in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680 or on your computer, phone, or tablet at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next. This is HRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Wise Dan, 8-length advantage back to Big Blue Kitten. He is back, and he is back in style. Wise Dan and John Velasquez to crush the field in the Ben Ally.
They come down toward the wire. Super Watson and Miguel Vasquez to deliver a huge milestone for trainer Mark Cassie. Super Watson has done it. 3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
And now they're at the eighth pole, and it is Micro Second battling it out here with Maddie's Express. Sanctuary City is third. This is going to be the milestone moment for trainer Todd Pletcher. Has reached the stratosphere. Career victory number 5,000.
It's Troy Ounce right now, a 16th left to history. Troy Ounce is up by four, and Troy Ounce will give trainer Steve Asmussen his 9,000th career win, only the second trainer to reach that mark.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Not only is Steve Asmussen just the second trainer to reach the 9,000 win mark, he is now only the second trainer to reach the 9,445 career win mark, equaling Dale Baird yesterday. He went 2-for-2 to equal Dale, and today Steve has 14 horses entered across four tracks, so you have to think that he will stand alone at the end of today's racing. Welcome back to the program. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, and it's a very busy Saturday. That open to the hour kind of tells it all, doesn't it? You heard a milestone win for Mark Cassie. You heard American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown. You heard a milestone win for Todd Pletcher, and then the milestone win for Steve Asmussen. Well, Cassie, American Pharoah, and Pletcher all inducted into the Hall of Fame yesterday in Saratoga Springs. And if you missed any portion of the show so far, it included Todd Pletcher's speech and Mike Rapoli's introduction of Todd Pletcher, which was fantastic. That came your way in the first hour of the program. You heard from Price Bell of Millridge talking about the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale, the 100th edition of that sale coming up on Monday and Tuesday in Saratoga Springs. You heard from Brad Free of the Daily Racing Forum talking about the Best Pal and the Yellow Ribbon Stakes at Del Mar, and Unsung Heroes with Junior McFarlane, a longtime friend and longtime worker with the Chief, Alan Jerkins, and his son, Jimmy Jerkins. And then just in the final segment there, Brendan Walsh was with me from Saratoga to talk about Maxfield and his contenders coming up in the races at Ellis Park later today. It's a busy day for him, and certainly appreciate the visit with Brendan just a short time ago. All right, the third hour of the show is loaded too. In the Room with Sean Clancy comes your way momentarily. He sits down with Jose Santos, Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history right around 10:25, and then Mark Cassie going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with me at 10:40 Eastern time. So a lot of things to get to. I threw out the poll question. I thought this was very, very telling when, at least interesting anyway, it's probably a better word, that Dale Baird is not a member of the Horse Racing Hall of Fame. Now, I told you Steve Asmussen equaled his mark of 9,445 wins yesterday, but Dale is not in the Hall of Fame. His wins came at lower level conditions, lower level tracks, didn't have... He wasn't in the spotlight in greatest stakes. He wasn't winning Kentucky Derbies and Breeders' Cups. And the question is, should trainer Dale Baird be in the Hall of Fame? Yes or no? And so far, 74% of you saying, yeah, Dale Baird deserves a spot in Horse Racing's Hall of Fame, and I think I have to agree. You can weigh in and continue to vote at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and if you don't do social media, email your responses to me, mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, without further ado, this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy.
Sunnyside has won the 129th Kentucky Derby with jockey Jose Saddles aboard. Jose Saddles turning the Preakness into a runaway.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with Hall of Fame jockey Jose Santos. We're here at Saratoga. Take me back to the first time you came to Saratoga.
Well, thank you. I came over here in 1985. I remember I was riding a horse. The first time I rode over here, I was riding a horse for Nick Zito. There was supposed to be a mile and a half race in the grass and rain that day, like it usually rains in opening day. And they moved the race to the main track. And luckily, I went to the lead and win the race. And after that, I fell in love right away from Saratoga.
Yeah, easy game, right? Just come to Saratoga, put them on the lead and win.
Yeah, it looked easy at the time, but and then when the reality hits, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy. The competition over here is real, real tough because the best horses coming over here, the best jockey, they are over here in the trainer as well, you know, so it's real tough competition, I guess. Since I've been here in 1985 to now, it's always been tough.
What was it like back when you were Angel Cordero? We had him on the show last week, and he was a champion jockey here going for those titles. You were the first one to kind of dethrone the champ. What was that like for you?
Well, there was a lot of fun. You know, I have a real great agent at the time, which Frank Sanabria. And it was tough because we have a real good colony of jockeys. Then I can mention and Georgie Velasquez, Jacinto Vasquez, Eddie Maple, Richie Migliore, Robbie Davis. I can say out of the 20 guys there was in the jacket room, maybe 18 of them right now they are Hall of Fame. It was fun, you know, when Angel and I was fighting for the title. And he win one race, I win two races, or vice versa. And it was a lot of expectation for the public. So, you know, there was not better than a horse. There was better than a trainer. A jockey than either the best Angel and Santos, Isactas, and people was making money. And it was pretty exciting because it was a lot of expectation. Who was going to win the title? And luckily, in the end, I win by four races, I believe.
And was it friendly competition with Angel, or what was it like? You guys, man, obviously arch rivals, but what was that like?
It was not a friendly competition because...
I don't think Angel ever did anything real friendly.
No, Angel, he, you know how he was, and he don't like to lose, and he win the title for 11 times, and he went to, of course, he went to win it again. He was crossing in front of me, and he played with my mind in the jockey's room. He always come out, you know, with some a rooster. One time he come out to the jockey room like doing some kind of voodoo. And it was funny. And then in the end he said, look, I have a ponytail. If you beat me, you can cut my ponytail. And say, what am I going to give you in return if you beat me? I say, no, you don't have to give me nothing. I say, I just don't want you to beat me. And say, well, it's too bad because I have a good business then. And say, I'm going to beat you. He say, no, you're not going to beat me. Ah, we're fighting back and forth. And we came in the middle of the meet. We have a slum, him and I. I think in 14 or 15 races that we rode, we won only one race. So, and then we took off again, and we was... Probably Angel win three or four races in the day, so did I, you know. So It was fun. In the end, Angel went, you know, the last day I went three races, he know he got beat. He came to the jockey run in the last day and the last race with a Caesar and let me catch his ponytail. So that was, I think that was like a trophy to me, you know, to be available to cut Angel Cordero's ponytail. It was a lot of fun.
Where's the ponytail? You got it on a mantle somewhere?
At Team France and Avria Haps. And I have the pictures, though. It, you know, when you look back, and it was a lot of fun.
Coming from Chile, was your goal to get to the top? I mean, how quickly did you think, wow, I can make it to the top in America?
Well, when I came first, I came to Hialeah. You know, a lot of the good trainers, good horses used to go to Hialeah. It was tough in the beginning because the language barrier. But there was a lot of Spanish people as well over there. So it was a little difficult. It took me about 5 months to win my first race. And then when I start winning, in 8 months, I start breaking record. I broke Angel Cordero record in Gulfstream Park. I won in 50 days, 61 races, so I was winning left and right. So, and when 85 came, I went to ride a horse in Aqueduct, and my agent Frank Tanauro was there. That's when I met him. He asked me if I want to come to New York. So I opened my eyes and said, I need to go finish some stuff in Gulfstream Park. I'll be here in 2 weeks. Since then, I've been here in New York. And it was fun because I started riding for Richard Dutroux Sr. right away, Fran Martin, and a lot of the good trainers, and started winning races right away. And it was fun because Angel and Georgie Velasquez, they was always together. They was compadre, both of them, you know. So when I started winning races, they having... one of the two, they be in front and the other one being behind watching me. And they having a signals. If you're not coming from inside, they was going, ha! If you're not coming from outside, they was going, ha, ha! So they used to look for me, you know. So one day there was the two in front of me, and I came right next to them, and I pushed into the inside, stopped that, ha, ha! Yeah, so... You know, it was we was competing in the track, and luckily, you know, I rode a lot of good horses, and that helped me a lot, and my career took off, you know.
So they recognized right off the bat that you were a threat to them, the way you rode and the way you could win races.
Yeah, when I came over here in '84, I was not an apprentice. I already rode in Chile for 13 months, and then I went to Colombia for 6 months. For 6 years. So I have plenty of experience. I just need the horse, you know, and my agent booked me with very nice horses, and I did on top of them what I was supposed to do, and stay away from the bad guys and get into the winner's circle.
Who was the fastest horse you rode?
Well, the faster horse and I rode was Groovy, but the best horse and I rode was Manila. He won the Breeders' Cup in, I believe, in 1986, and I rode it five times and win five Grade One with him. It was a wonderful horse, and I believe I rode about 11 champions, and then there was Criminal Type. Metastar, Flies of Free, Crystal Clarence. I mean, horses, they probably, I think Manila is the only one is in the Hall of Fame, but I'm surprised. I was in the Hall of Fame a couple of days ago. The Criminal Tie is not there.
Yeah, he's a good horse, older handicap type horse.
He was the only horse in the same years, probably 88, I think it was. He beat Sunday Silent and the Hollywood Gold Cup, and beat easy goal in the same year and the mid mile. So he won for me 5 grade 1 2.
How do you know when a horse is good? I mean, is it the moment you get on a horse, or like is a good horse different than an average horse immediately when you get on?
Yeah, you see the class of the horses right away when you get on. You know, nothing bad in them, and when they hit to the track and they do amazing stuff, even though sometimes they break bad, but, you know, you give you a chance to get in position, and then when they ask, and they're always there, you know. And I mean, I had to mention a funny side, you know, a horse there when the Kentucky Derby on me. I remember I was here in Saratoga when I believe Edgar Prado was supposed to work the horse, and he don't show up, and they asked me to work the horse. My agent, I said, can you come in and work a horse for Barclay Tag? And I said, wow, for that groggy son of a gun, I'd say. He said, yeah, here is a good horse. I get on the horse and I'm working. And I told, don't ever get on this horse because he want to win the Kentucky Derby. I told my agent that day. He say, "Are you sure?" And say, "Believe me, this is a real, real good horse." So, and he ran in September in Belmont Park, breaking for the 13th hole and 5.5 furlongs, and he went like 11 3/4 lengths. And I was not wrong. You know, I've been wrong many times, but about horses, I'm pretty much there.
Who was the toughest guy you rode against? Was it Angel or Velasquez, or who was the toughest guy to ride against?
Well, I think the toughest guy, and I rode probably Angel because he not only that he can ride, and when he know who was supposed to beat, and he go to them, and they say, "Listen, you have a speed. I'm gonna let you go," but nah, Angel do the opposite. Yeah, he did it on me, you know, when I came over here. I was riding a speed horse sort of thing, and he told me, "Look, we both have a speed. Let's break nice and easy, and so when we get to the quarter pole, and we see who is the best." So I first time I listened to him and break nice and easy. And I look up, Angel was 5 in front of me. He came out of there like a crazy guy. And after that, I never believed Angel what he would say. You know, but that was in the track. Outside the track, it's completely different human being. You know, racing is a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a good lesson Angel taught you, right? I mean, you got a good lesson early.
Yeah, I mean, you learn from a lot of guys. You know, the older you get, the wiser you are. You know, and when you see new guys, you do the same to them.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Did you do the same thing to young guys?
Yeah, I mean, I was not an aggressive rider. You know, I just worry about my horses, but we take advantage of the apprentice, you know, they are in front, and you get next to them, you smoosh their horses, you know, and to go a little faster, make the pace for us and stuff like that.
Beautiful, huh? How much do you miss riding?
Well, the first 3 years, they was real tough. I've been retired for 14 years. First 3 years was real tough. Right now, you know, I'm 60 years old now, and it's a different ball game. And you see these new guys, you know, you say, well, this guy, they are kamikaze. But, you know, they have a lot of good riders still. And probably in the future, they want to still have good riders.
You could ride with these guys, though, back in the day?
Back in the day, yeah. Oh, yeah, not a problem. They're being behind of us.
What's that old line they asked the Chicago Bulls, would you win the championship, you know, against these guys? And they said, yeah. And they said, how much you win by? Well, we'd probably win by, you know, 10 points, considering we're 60 years old now. Right? This is the Fanticipate question of the day. Jose, who was your biggest fan over your riding career? Your family, your parents? Maybe take me back to who was the biggest fan you ever had in your career?
My biggest fan was my son, Jose Jr. yeah, he's, you know, I remember I was riding a horse. He was 4 years old. I was riding a horse in Calder for Scotty Schuhofer. And he was just coming back, and he said, Jose, look, if the horse could win, it's fine, if he, but don't abuse him. So I don't abuse the horse, and the horse got beat. He was a big favorite. And Scotty came and see me, and my son was riding it to him, and he said, Dad, this is the worst race that I ever seen you ride. He was a criticizer of me all the time, but he turned out to be a real good guy. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, your son now is an agent. What's that like, watching your son represent jockeys like he does?
Well, it's put me back in the map, I can say. You know, watching the race today, his jockeys riding, and I'm his bigger fan now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. It changes, right? Now you're rooting for his jockeys just like he was rooting for you.
That's right. You know, team change.
I remember being here when you won on Lemon Drop Kid, won the Travers on Lemon Drop Kid, and Jose was there. I mean, that might be a special moment to share that with your son like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's always special when you're in the winner's circle, you know. When your son look up you, you know, with so much love and happiness that you won, you know, that's special.
Yeah, those moments when you look over his funny side, how much he enjoyed that and appreciated that. It's great to share it with your family.
Oh, definitely. That's a priceless moment. You know, I'm sometimes when I'm home, you know, having a drink and I get my albums with photos and start remember, you know, the moments, and it's fun. You know, it's when you see pictures or you see the tape of the races and you remember a little thing that happened in the race that nobody knows, and you see, wow, here in the half a mile I make the difference to win the race, and also, you know, as you see here in the half a mile I messed it up and I lose the race because that, you know, so you know, people say, you know, what you can change in your career. It's nothing to change it. I mean, I have a great career, and I'm made into the Hall of Fame, and that's the best thing that can ever happen to me in races.
Yeah, what's it like walking into the Hall of Fame for that ceremony and looking around and seeing the guys that you're with? And, I mean, you get a moment where you think, wow, I really accomplished something with my career.
Yeah, I mean, you see Vasquez, Cordero, you see all the big guns, and they are there, you know, with me. And I went a couple of days ago to the Hall of Fame, and I looked my plaque and say, wow, I definitely did something good in races, and it made me proud. It made me proud.
That's Jose Santos. Got a lot to be proud of in a career that spanned decades and wound up in the Hall of Fame. Thanks, Jose.
You're welcome.
Well, what a visit. Great job by Sean Clancy. My thanks to Jose Santos for taking the time to sit down with Sean yesterday. And don't forget, if you missed any of the In the Room segments, you can go to our website, click on the Shows tab at the top of the homepage, and you can listen to all of the In the Room conversations Sean has had since we launched a segment a few months ago. There have been some amazing visits, and do yourself a favor, head back and take a listen. I'm going to be back to get ready for a stroll through racing history shortly, but first, a word from the sponsors of In the Room. That's My Racehorse and Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online, enjoy insider access to your stable, and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today. My Racehorse offers securities only for the use of an offering circulation as part of an offering statement. Qualified by the Securities and Exchange Commission under Tier 2 of Regulation A.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing?
Anticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
I'm back to join Kurt Becker for a stroll through racing history right after this. It's the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Woodbine is gearing up for its biggest day of racing on Sunday, August 22nd, with the 162nd Queen's Plate, a day full of the best in Canadian thoroughbred racing, great fashion, amazing food, and loads of fun. And with Woodbine welcoming fans back with limited capacity, you will want to call today to reserve your seat. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit Woodbine.com. That's Woodbine.com.
Live racing is back at Ellis Park with a 31-day Run Happy Meet through September 4th. Admission is free with reserved seating available in the Sky Theater and Clubhouse through ellisparkracing.com. And for the first time, all Ellis Park races will be shown in high definition. Purses are scheduled to average a record $350,000 a day, including Kentucky-bred maidens running for a track record $51,000. With 16 stakes and a two-year-old program as good as anywhere in the country, Ellis Park is the place to be this summer. Visit EllisParkRacing.com. Ellis Park, feel the thunder.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of grade one performers in his crop. Multiple grade one winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poet's won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Lady Secret still has the lead. On the outside is Enswell, second by a half. Sunny Galore is third. Lady Secret on the inside leads still by a length and a half. Enswell is second by about two. Now Cutlass Reality on the rail gains into third. On the outside is Sunny Galore. Further out is Fuzzy. On the inside, King Swan and Skip Trial. Lady Secret has the lead by three. Enswell second by two. On the outside, Fuzzy gains into third. Then it's Skip Trial, but it is Lady Secret in front.
And love that call. Welcome back, Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was the 1986 renewal of the Whitney Lady Secret, the filly beating the boys, and she was the Iron Lady. And you could see why with that performance. Of course, 2 years later, Hall of Famer Personal Ensign would come back and capture the Whitney. That was in 1988. And today, Swiss Skydiver, the four-year-old filly, and reigning champion three-year-old from last year, will attempt to become the first female since Personal Ensign to beat the boys later today in the Whitney. She certainly part of racing history, as is Lady Secret, as is Personal Ensign. And in just a moment, Kurt Becker will take you on another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. But before we get there, I want to remind you that ABR's Fan Choice Awards are now open, and here is what you can vote on right now. Ending today, August 7th, you can go and vote on your favorite racetrack food. That is always a very popular category. Starting tomorrow, Sunday, August 8th through the 15th, your favorite mid-small circuit racetrack. Head over there. All voting takes place at americasbestracing.net. So go there and cast your vote for those two categories. Today, favorite racetrack food. Starting tomorrow, your favorite mid-small circuit racetrack at americasbestracing.net. Time now to join Kurt Becker for this week's Stroll Through Racing History.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He was a troublemaker, a bad actor. He was full of himself. He was even obnoxious. And as of Friday, August 6, 2021, he is now enshrined in Racing's Hall of Fame. His name was Tom Boehling. To be clear, Tom Boehling was not a human being, at least not this Tom Boehling. Instead, this Tom Boehling was a horse. He was foaled in 1870 at a farm known as McGrathiana, located about 3 miles north of Lexington, Kentucky on Newtown Pike. Owner-breeder Hal Price McGrath would become known a few years later as the owner-breeder of Aristides, winner in 1875 of the inaugural running of the Kentucky Derby. But while Aristides might be better remembered by history, it was Tom Boehling who first brought fame and recognition to Mr. McGrath and his farm. The fame was because of the victories which Tom Boehling recorded on the East Coast. The recognition, however, was not always of the most desirable variety. Tom Boehling was known as a horse who had a temper, and he was therefore known for creating disturbances when he stepped onto the racetrack. Often there would be a groom on each side of the horse attempting to keep him under control just long enough to get him to the starting line. He would lunge left and right. He would plant himself against the inside rail and refuse to budge. On one occasion, he even had to be walked backwards over the course of 200 yards just to get him into line for the start of a race. How, then, did Tom Boehling earn induction into Racing's Hall of Fame in a ceremony staged yesterday in Saratoga Springs, New York? The answer is simple. In addition to having an ill temperament, Tom Boehling was a talented racehorse. He had speed, he had stamina, and his victories were so impressive that at least one newspaper at the time declared him to be the greatest horse ever to set foot on a racetrack in the United States and possibly the world. Tom Boehling was trained by Ansel Williamson, himself inducted posthumously into the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame in 1998. A former slave, Williamson was a brilliant conditioner of thoroughbred racehorses. Under Williamson's guidance, Tom Boehling made his debut as a juvenile in 1872. He lost his first two starts, but then won three in a row. The following year, a great debate arose as to who was the top three-year-old in North America. Some said it was Count D'Orsay, owned by August Belmont. Others said it was Springbok, who had won the Belmont Stakes that year for owner David McDaniel. But Hal Price McGrath insisted that Tom Boehling was the best of the crop. Even a victory in the Jersey Derby at the old Monmouth Park racetrack did not satisfy the critics. They said Count D'Orsay would have won the race if he hadn't missed the start. And when a filly beat Tom Boehling in the Ocean Hotel Stakes, the critics pointed to that as further proof that Tom Boehling was overrated. As it happened, Tom would never lose again. And in the Travers Stakes at Saratoga, he would assert himself as the best three-year-old of 1873. When Tom Boehling stepped onto the track at Saratoga that day, his mane was braided and adorned with orange ribbons and green ribbons, the stable colors of Hal Price McGrath. Jockey Bobby Swim wore a green jacket with an orange sash and a green cap. Back then, the Travers was held on opening day of the Saratoga meet as the very first race, and the distance was 1.75 miles. The date was July 24, 1873. And Tom Boehling entered the race fresh off a 20-length victory just 3 days earlier in the Robin Stakes at Monmouth. As he entered the track for the Travers, Tom Boehling was uncharacteristically quiet. As for his conformation, he stood 16 hands with a short neck, a broad chest, and great length to his overall structure. He was a light bay with a blaze extending to his left nostril. Observers noted that he had a long, low, powerful stride with remarkably easy and graceful action. Tom Bowling won the Travers that day, drawing clear by 12 lengths after Springbok fell while entering the stretch. A steward's investigation into the matter lasted 30 minutes following a claim of foul, but the result stood. Tom Bowling was the winner. Hal Price McGrath was so happy that he pulled ribbons from his horse's mane and joyfully distributed them to the ladies in the audience. And he took the great silver cup which was given to him in the winner's circle, and he went to a nearby pool hall, filled it with his beverage of choice, and asked friends to come and help him empty it. Still, there were critics. Some said that Count D'Orsay had once again missed the break. Others pointed to the fact Springbok had fallen and did not have a fair chance. McGrath responded by offering $1,000 for a rematch with both horses on a dark day at Saratoga at the Travers distance, but he found no takers. Instead, Tom Bowling went on to win the Dixie Stakes at a distance of 2 miles at Pimlico in October that year, and he continued his winning streak into the summer of 1874. He would retire from racing with a record of 14 wins in 17 career starts. Tom Bowling's final resting place is on a farm in Bryantsville, Kentucky, about 30 minutes south of Lexington. The Cincinnati Enquirer once declared that he was maybe the greatest horse ever bred in America, or even the world. And now, Tom Bowling has been enshrined in the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
My thanks to Kurt for that segment and to Lane's End and Keeneland for making those possible. Great story about Tom Bowling. And continuing with our theme of the Hall of Fame inductions, I'm going to continue with that theme even further as we make our way down the road to the Breeders' Cup coming up in just about 5 minutes. I'll be joined by dual Hall of Famer Mark Cassie to look back on yesterday's induction and talk about his horses coming up in the big races later today. He has several, and several that are going to have an impact on this year's Breeders' Cup, no doubt. Well, I thought this would be appropriate here, after Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history, to take a look at some additional notable dates in racing history on this weekend, August 7th and August 8th. And let's say happy anniversary to trainer Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons and jockey Eddie Delahousse. It was on August 7th, 1900, that Sonny Jim had his first stakes winner, Agnes D, at Brighton Beach. And August 7th, 1988, Eddie D, the native of Louisiana, won his 4,000th race aboard a two-year-old filly named Fawn and Han in the fourth race at Del Mar. Tomorrow, a notable day for a couple of reasons. August 8th, 1970 is when jockey Bill Shoemaker won his 6,000th career victory aboard Shining Count at Del Mar. And August 8th, 1987 is when jockey Kent DeSormo set the record for most stakes wins by an apprentice, 13, aboard King Snow in the Primer Stakes at Pimlico. The previous record was held by Steve Cawthon. So big weekend, at least in terms of anniversaries here in the sport of thoroughbred racing. When I come back, it's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with Mark Cassie here on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Racing is back at Colonial Downs through September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Horsemen will love the big money offered during this year's meet with average purses of $500,000 per day. In addition, maidens will compete for $50,000 and stakes horses will benefit from a beefed up stakes schedule. Plus, owners are guaranteed at least $1,000 per start with trainers receiving a $300 per start bonus. It's all happening at Colonial Downs, July 19th through September 1st.
An undefeated graded stakes winner on the track, Algorithms, has sired over 70% winners from starters. His top runners include Pennsylvania Derby winner Math Wizard, graded stakes winner Recruiting Ready, juvenile stakes winner and multiple graded stakes placed South Bend, and these recent stakes winners and stakes performers.
To get there, but Kanani will win it.
Algorithms, standing at Claiborne Farm.
If you're looking for the ideal training environment for your yearlings and two-year-olds, look no further than Kirkwood Stables in Camden, South Carolina. Kirkwood's serene setting offers world-class training facilities with all of the amenities owners and trainers seek, including two dirt tracks, starting gate, and miles of turf gallops and breeze strips. Watch the drone video at kirkwoodstables.com and see for yourself why Kirkwood is the Southeast's premier training facility.
Horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick five, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick five, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick six. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
Consistent success tested over time. There is no better example than Millridge Farm. Founded in 1962 by Alice Chandler, this year's inductee into the Hall of Fame as Pillar of the Turf. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 36 Grade 1 winners, including 8 Breeders' Cup winners and 2 Horses of the Year. Millridge offers its largest and highest quality consignment ever at this year's Fasig Tipton Saratoga Sale, with 9 yearlings by leading stallions and promising first-year sires. And will be showing at Barn 5 on Friday, August 6th. Millridge, standing the test of time.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
My dad and I first visited the Hall of Fame here in Saratoga in 1972 when I was 11. I still remember walking around with my mouth wide open in amazement. At the end of the visit, I confidently told my dad, "I will be in here someday." As any good father will do, he said, "Yes, Mark, you will." But we did it.
Yeah, he did it, and has done it with class throughout his entire career. That's trainer Mark Cassie. That's the way he ended his Hall of Fame induction speech yesterday in Saratoga Springs, New York. It was an emotional speech for Mark. He's an emotional guy. He said he was crying even before he came on stage, and I can certainly believe that. What a moment, and he is with me now to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mark, first of all, good morning and congratulations, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Mike, and you got me crying. I mean, just listening to it, you know, it's just it's very emotional.
This will bring you back to reality. My wife, Michelle, was sitting next to me. We were watching your speech on the Hall of Fame website, and the minute you said that you first visited there in 1972, she popped off and said, "Hey, that's the year I was born."
Oh, there you go.
That'll take you back a little bit, man.
Actually, my wife was born too. 1972.
Perfect. Let me tell you, that was something else. It was so special, and we are so happy for you, for Todd, for all of the inductees that got in. Charlie Lopresti, I mean, you talk about another classy individual in the sport. He came up and accepted for Wise Dan. Just a fantastic day.
Yes, it was a day I'll never forget. It was, like I said, very emotional. You know, there were some restless nights leading up to it. So I'm proud of it, but I'm happy to have it behind me, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm sure. I noticed when Tina came up to help you with the one segment of your speech where you started talking about your mom and the sacrifices she made and how, quite frankly, you probably wouldn't be where you are today without those sacrifices. Tina had to come up and read that for you, and I can understand why, because in all the conversations we've ever had on this program and privately, I never knew that story. And I have to tell you, I was teary-eyed listening to her go through it.
Yeah, I haven't, you know, shared that with very many people. You know, but this was a special occasion, and you know, I knew because I had read through the speech and practiced it, you know, a few times, and I couldn't get through it. So I forewarned her. I said, there's a very good shot I'm not going to get through this. So if I look at you, you've got to come. And she was like a speeding bullet, you know, and she told me afterwards, I'm glad you did the rest because I started crying and I wouldn't have been able to finish. So, yeah, my mom, that was, you know, talk about love. You know, she did it for me.
Yeah, what a wonderful story that was, and just another part of the great story that is Hall of Fame trainer Mark Cassie. And I'll say it this way, dual Hall of Fame trainer Mark Cassie. Could you ever imagine, Mark, two Hall of Fames?
Somebody mentioned to me if I wanted to try Mexico for a while that I could get all of North America. But so, you know, I couldn't, like I had said, you know, I told my dad I would get in there one day. He probably never doubted it, but I can't say I was, you know, after, you know, there were many years I wouldn't have believed it. I often have days or weeks and say, and you're going in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
You know, when you have a bad week or a bad day.
Yeah, well, you always have that to fall back on now. And Price Bell was on the program with me in the beginning of the show today. He was talking about his consignment at the Saratoga sale next week. But his grandmother, Alice Healy Chandler, was inducted yesterday as a pillar of the turf and somebody who has done so much for the sport of thoroughbred racing that was so well-deserved.
Absolutely.
I asked Price what it was like to see his grandmother's plaque and read her story in the Hall of Fame. What was it like for you to stand there and look at the plaque that said Mark Cassie?
I just, you know, it's just, I still don't really believe it. I went last night, Tina and I went, and we watched the show, you know, the new show there. And to believe, you know, that I'm in there with all those icons of racing, and it's just, I don't know. I don't know if it's totally hit me, but yeah, it's quite amazing, you know. Especially Mike, this is not—it's not something that, you know, I decided I wanted to do 20 years ago or 25 years ago. It's what I wanted to do since I was a little boy, and so it's you know, everything I've concentrated on forever, and to have it. And then to have it at Saratoga, have it in a pavilion where, you know, been coming to since I was 10 or 11. My dad had an RV, and we would park it out in the parking lot. Fazek Tipton would let my dad park it there. We would stay there. I'd come eat breakfast and lunch at the snack shack. And my dad and I actually yesterday driving to the event, I rode down a road. I don't even know the name of it. I just know it by looks, and showed my wife where him and I would stop and eat pizza. We would walk because the racing form used to come out at night around 9 o'clock, I think the night before, and we would walk and we'd have pizza, and then we would wait for the racing form and come home, and you know, some great memories.
Talking with dual Hall of Famer Mark Cassie here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mark, there isn't much left to accomplish when you get into two Hall of Fames. You've reached the pinnacle of success in the sport of thoroughbred racing. What is it that still motivates you every day?
Well, I have some very loyal owners that have, obviously I wouldn't be where I am today without them. And what motivates me is not to let them down. You know, they've given me a privilege. It's a privilege to train racehorses. It's a privilege, you know, when an owner gives you his horse. And so that's what drives me. It drives me. I don't like failing. I don't like letting people down. So that drives me. I want to win the Kentucky Derby, and If I don't, I mean, I guess I don't, but I'm going to give it every ounce I have to get that one thing accomplished. If you ask me beyond that, what do I want? Really nothing. I'm confident. I mean, I feel very fortunate to have done, you know, what I've done, and I don't need more. I just need to continue, and like I said, continue to do the best I can for every owner. And it doesn't matter, Mike, you know, if it's a $10,000 claimer. I mean, we won a race last night for last race at Woodbine for Hestie Sports, Maiden 10. And you know what? I take that serious. They've entrusted their horses to me, and it's my job to win. So it doesn't matter whether it's the Kentucky Derby or Maiden 10, the last race at Woodbine. I want to win.
Yeah, very competitive, and that's one of the reasons that Mark Cassie is in two Hall of Fames. Mark, this segment is called Road to the Breeders' Cup, so let's talk about a few of the horses that you have running today who we may see in the Breeders' Cup later this year at Del Mar. You've already got 5 Breeders' Cup wins to your credit. Saratoga, you run 2 horses in the Test Stakes, Make Mischief and Super Sensational, and then come back with Palazzi in the Saratoga Derby Invitational. Tell me about those horses.
Well, both, you know, Super Sensational was sensational her last start at Belmont. She was impressive. She put up some numbers that would make her very competitive in the Breeders' Cup Philly sprint down the road. I want to, you know, it's nice to see it once. You want to see it twice or 3 times. So, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed that she can give us the same performance. She's trained very well. So I would expect a good effort out of her. Make Mischief, she's a nice filly. Seems to be getting better, but she's going to have to step up her game. She's going to have to run the race of her life to have a shot today. But if you're not in it, you can't win it. Palazzi is a different story. I feel bad for Palazzi. He's been very unlucky in his last couple starts. No pace, stuck down, you know, on the inside. And he's a long shot. But if they set some pace, you know, he might surprise them. He'll come running, I think. So is he a grade one horse? He still has to prove that.
You know, Brad,
I like my horse in California today.
Yeah, I was just going to go there.
Pal. Yeah, Papa Cat. I feel like I thought all along this spring that he was one of our best two-year-olds. He surprised me how fast he was when we started him down at Gulfstream, brought him back to Ocala, trained him there, was been very happy with how he trained. Again, you know, it's hard to base a horse's ability off of one race. So you like to see a couple before you get real excited. But I would tell you this, if on a A, B, C, D, training wise, he's an A, maybe an A+. So,
wow.
Yeah, I expect big things out of him.
Brad Free from the Daily Racing Forum, who covers Del Mar, was on the show with me earlier, and he talked in glowing terms about that debut by Papa Cap and the way that he's been training. So you've got him in your corner too.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's a good spot. So far, we tried a little experiment. We went out there and we did something a little different with Tex Sutton down. And it's not as easy to ship horses, so we actually vanned them all out. And so far, they've handled it very well, him being one, is, you know, and like I said, our horses have ran well. If he shows up, he'll be tough to beat, I think.
This show, Mark, is presented by our friends at Woodbine Entertainment. They've been remarkable in supporting us over the years, and we love when we get a chance to visit Woodbine. You have a horse today in the Georgian Bay Stakes, Meet the Soprano. What can you tell me about him?
It's a filly. She's never run on the grass. She's fast. So far, I didn't have her as a two-year-old. Got her as a three-year-old. She's trained better than she's ran. And those people, you know, they're from They're from Ontario. They love horse racing, and it'd be very special to be able to win this race for them. I think she's got a shot. I do. It's just how she takes to the grass.
Listen, I know it's been a very emotional time for you, and it's been a very special time, and I don't want to take any more of your Saturday morning. So go enjoy the rest of the time with friends and family. And Mark, again,
well, I'm actually looking at yearlings. So we're working on next year. So.
It never ends.
There's no time. Yeah, there's no. Well, I think Mike Rapoli said it, and it's true. It's like a marathon, and that never ends. And that would be a great way to describe Todd and I's job. It's a marathon. There's no time to rest.
Well, go get it done, Hall of Famer. Congratulations.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Mark Cassie here. Wow, fantastic visit with Mark here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And I told you, you think about the people that were inducted yesterday and class all around. It epitomizes what the sport of thoroughbred racing is supposed to be on so many levels. And Mark certainly represents the sport and is a great ambassador as well as anybody. Going to get to a final break. I'll come back and wrap it up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear. As they come down to the finish, Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures, earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219, XM 201, or streaming at horseracingradio.com.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, don't forget, if you're looking for industry news and headlines, simply head over to bloodhorse.com and check out the new Blood Horse Plus. You can download it in the App Store. Bloodhorse.com, Bloodhorse Plus. They do a fantastic job. And, of course, Bloodhorse Magazine and the Bloodhorse social media pages are just unbelievable. So my thanks to Bloodhorse for all of their support of what we do here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Results of the poll question today: should trainer Dale Baird be in the Hall of Fame? 75% of you saying yes, only 25% saying no, don't think so. I agree. I think if you win that many races and you're the all-time leading trainer in the history of the sport, now co-all-time leading trainer, then you should be. By the way, congratulations to Chad Brown yesterday. On the same day that Steve Asmussen equaled the all-time mark, Chad Brown recorded milestone win number 2,000. So a big day for both trainers. Congratulations to them. Good luck to Steve Asmussen later today as he looks to stand alone atop the all-time list. My thanks to Price Bell, to Brad Free, to the folks at the Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame for the audio they provided to us. Junior McFarlane, who was with our unsung hero today, presented by Claiborne. Brendan Walsh was here. Mark Cassie was here. And Jose Santos went in the room with Sean Clancy. My thanks to all of them and to all of you for listening to today's show and participating in the poll question. I'm back next week with another brand new edition. Visit horseracingradio.net. Follow us on social media for all of our podcasts and for all of the information. My thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, and to Sean C. for social media. I'm Mike Penna. Go Steelers.